From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Clairiere still has five lengths to find and a 16th to do so as Super Sensational is switched out. Lil Tootsie is fourth, but close to home, it's Travel Column. Travel Column to win the Fairgrounds Oaks handily.
Past the Champagne, a two-length lead. She leads it by a length and a half. By a length, Malathat still trying. Past the Champagne, Malathat running on from the outside at the line. Malathat gets up to win it for Shadwell Stable and Joel Rosario in the Central Bank Ashland.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Down to the wire, it's Hidden Stash and Rafael Bayerano along the rail. Digging back, Gamely is Helium. Looks like we're down to two. Helium repels the challenge. It's Helium in a huge effort, turns away the challenge of Hidden Stash.
And here's Bourbonic, who was last, making a late run out in the middle of the track. It is Dynamic One and Bourbonic, Dynamic One and Bourbonic, a photo finish. Bourbonic got there under Kendrick Carmouche. Kendrick Carmouche thinks he got there, and it's a major upset in this 2021 Wood Memorial.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to another five-star Bananas Foster Cherries Jubilee Dom Perignon edition of the show that launched this network. It is the Equine Forum right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Next Saturday, I will be hosting this show in our broadcast booth high above the finish line at Churchill Downs on the 147th Kentucky Derby Day, which means, by the way, that we are now only 7 days, 10 hours, 43 minutes, and 7 seconds away from that 147th Run for the Roses. And this morning, I'm going to continue to get you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports. And to do that, I'll kick off the show with Churchill Downs publicity manager, Kevin Kirstein. He's going to join me live from Churchill Downs to update you on all of the Oaks and Derby horses who were on the track this morning and over the past 24 hours for those critical final workouts before the big dance. Now, keep in mind, this is normally the busiest morning for Oaks and Derby horses to put in their final big work in advance of those two races. And there was plenty of activity this morning, including Champion Essential Quality, who, by the way, expected to go favored in the Run for the Roses next Saturday. He went 5 furlongs in 1:20 under the lights early this morning. But because this morning's weather forecast here in central Kentucky called for rain throughout much of the Bluegrass State, several connections decided to move those workouts to yesterday morning. So I'm going to recap those with Kevin and find out which horses went to the track today. The rain really has not arrived yet. It's arriving later in the day than most experts thought that it would. So the horses that went out early this morning and are on the track now are fine. And all of the Oaks and Derby horses, more than likely at this point, sitting here at 8 o'clock Eastern, have gotten their workouts in and did it over a dry racetrack. So Kevin will be here in just a few minutes to update you on everything happening with Oaks and Derby contenders at Churchill Downs. At Santa Anita on Thursday, Medina Spirit worked 6 furlongs in 1:12.20. He was slated to arrive at Churchill Downs yesterday, right around 1 o'clock. Medina Spirit will be the 24th Kentucky Derby starter for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. And he will be the only horse that he will saddle in this year's race. There was a chance that we could see a second horse from the Baffert barn get in, but that won't be the case. Hozier would have drawn in yesterday with the defection of Dreamshake from the Peter Urton barn. He said he will not run Dreamshake in the Kentucky Derby. So Hozier was the next one in line to get in. Hozier is not going to run, which puts King Fury, winner of the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland, for Ken McPeak, into the field. And you remember Kenny joining me on this show last weekend. And Kenny talked about, right as he was getting off the finishing the interview with me and getting off the line, his last comment to me was, "Let's hope King Fury gets in. He's really excited about this horse." And he is in. Ken McPeak, who went to UK, University of Kentucky, is a Lexington, Kentucky guy through and through. He bleeds blue. And now he can have a chance to win his very first Kentucky Derby with King Fury. So Bob Baffert will not have two. He'll only have one. Medina Spirit, pretty good one. And doesn't this kind of remind you of last year with Bob? Think about it. Last year, and I know that things changed with the pandemic and the postponement of the race moving back to September. But last year, he was loaded early in the spring. He had Charlatan. He had Nadal. He had Thousand Words, authentic. And remember, Eight Rings? There were plenty of people thinking that Eight Rings could be a Derby horse early in the season. He ended up with two, Authentic and Thousand Words, with him in Louisville. Thousand Words flipped in the paddock before the race. He was scratched. That left him with just one, Authentic. Didn't matter. He won. Three of Bob's six Derby wins have come when he has had just a single horse in the race. So just because he's down to one doesn't mean he doesn't have a chance. He can become the all-time winningest trainer in the history of the Kentucky Derby if he gets lucky number seven. This year, again, comparing it to last year, his big three early in the season, Life is Good, Concert Tour, Medina Spirit. He shows up in Louisville only with Medina Spirit. And just like Authentic last year, Medina Spirit finished second in the Santa Anita Derby. Of course, Authentic, because of the schedule change, would go on to win the Haskell before he won the Kentucky Derby in September. But this seems like a carbon copy of last year for Bob. The disappointment of losing some of your big guns. But yet, here you are with a horse that is pretty legit. And Medina Spirit is probably going to be a pretty decent price. You're going to get a good price. And oh, by the way, you're going to get a six-time Kentucky Derby winning Hall of Fame trainer and a three-time Kentucky Derby winning Hall of Fame jockey with Johnny V. Not the worst stab in the world. Do not overlook Medina Spirit and just say, oh, Bob's cupboards are bare. He only has one horse. Three out of six times. Three of his six wins have come when he's had one horse in the race. Not a bad percentage there, huh? I'm also going to talk Derby this morning with the man who will be alongside me in the booth next Saturday for our exclusive radio coverage of the Run for the Roses. That's Kurt Becker. He, of course, always brilliant track announcer at Keeneland. Just celebrated 25 years in the booth at Keeneland, by the way. Nice little ceremony for him there yesterday on closing day. I'm going to go ahead and talk to Kurt coming up in just a little bit. He will be here at 9 o'clock Eastern, and he'll share his thoughts on this year's Derby field and look back on some of the top storylines from the Keeneland meet, too. He got a chance to call the champion, Essential Quality, and the likely Derby favorite winning the Bluegrass Stakes, so I'll talk to him about that. Trainer Graham Motion will be with me in the final segment of the show at 10:40 Eastern to take a look at his outstanding Derby win 10 years ago. 10 years. It's been 10 years since Animal Kingdom's Derby score. Can you believe it? That kind of took me back a little bit. And I might even convince Graham to share a few thoughts about this year's Derby field. Maybe ask him if he could train any horse in this year's field. Which one would he choose? Might be a fun question for Graham Motion at 10:40 Eastern. That's the final segment of the show. Poll question today at HRN on Twitter. Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. What's your favorite way to bet the Kentucky Derby? How do you like to bet it? Give you a few choices. Win, place, and show. Exacta, trifecta, or superfecta. Oaks, Derby, double, or other. And if you choose other, please specify. So what's your favorite way to bet the Kentucky Derby? Win, place, show. Exacta, try, super, Oaks, Derby, double, and the fourth one, other. If you have a different way you like to approach the Kentucky Derby, let me know that too. What's your favorite way to bet the Kentucky Derby? Let me know at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. For those of you that don't do social media, you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will try to pass along those responses as we move throughout the show here this morning. All right, kicks off at 8:15. That's our first talk segment. Comes your way in about 5 or 6 minutes. Churchill Downs publicity manager Kevin Kirstein will join me live from Churchill Downs. Today's first bet comes up at 8:30 Eastern time. At 8:35, Lori Douglas and Bethany Walton with Farm Paint will be here. I'll get a chance to talk to them. At 9 o'clock, my man Kurt Becker, HRN analyst, Keeneland announcer. 9:20, it is our weekly Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift. That will be followed by jockey Chris DiCarlo, who joined Bobby Newman and guest co-host Chuck Simon on our race day show earlier this week to talk about the new whip rules, which have been instituted in the state of New Jersey. Some fascinating comments from Chris, and he'll tell you why this situation is not good for the jockeys and why so many jockeys are saying, you know what, you're going to do it that way? We're not riding at Monmouth. Forget it. We'll go someplace else. That comes up at 9:20 Eastern. You won't want to miss it. 9:40, our Industry Star of the Week segment. 10 o'clock, we go in the room with Sean Clancy as he sits down for what was an amazing one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Dylan Davis. That's something you want to be locked in for at 10 o'clock Eastern. 10:30, Kurt Becker will take you on our weekly stroll through racing history presented by Keeneland and Lane's End. And at 10:40 is trainer Graham Motion looking back on his monumental win in the 2011 Run for the Roses. All of that coming up on a very, very busy program. Make sure you take time to go to our Twitter feed and to our Facebook to weigh in on the poll question. Shoot me an email if you want to do it that way. Lots of ways to get in touch with the show and to participate here 1 week away from the Run for the Roses. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
There's a quarter mile to go in the Kentucky Derby. They turn for home, and here's Nyquist. Champion Nyquist comes off the turn and takes the lead away from Gunrunner. It's these two clear by five. Mohamed's posing on the outside, and Exaggerator's flying down the center of the track.
by the Twin Spires in the Kentucky Derby. It's Nyquist clear by three. Gunrunner's running in second. Exaggerator continues to close. Time is running out. Nyquist is 100 yards from home. Exaggerator with one final try in the Derby. Nyquist holds on. He's undefeated, and he's won the 142nd Kentucky Derby. Exaggerator was second. Sudden breaking news, Bohemond and Gunrunner in a photo for third, fourth, and fifth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. 1 week away from the Run for the Roses. That was a special one there for trainer Doug O'Neill and the team associated with Nyquist, who is now standing stud at Darley here in Lexington, Kentucky, and doing one heck of a as good of a racehorse as he was, he is turning out to be equally as good, if not better, believe it or not, as a sire. He has been fantastic. And Doug O'Neill could add a third Kentucky Derby win to his resume with Hot Rod Charlie, the Louisiana Derby winner, who is second in the points, and he's a horse that a lot of people will have their eye on next Saturday at Churchill Downs. And Kevin Kirstein is the publicity manager at Churchill. He has had his eye on all of these contenders since they have arrived in Louisville, and he's with me now here on HRRN. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How's everything at the Downs?
Oh, man, it's great. It's, you know, it feels like Derby around here, as it should, with 7 days out until the first Saturday in May. And it's everything's happening around the track, and it's just so exciting to be in Derby season. Two Derbies in 7 months, that's a dream for a guy like me. Maybe not for some other people around the track because of the extra work, but it's great to have Derby back.
Yeah, I will be one that will admit that last year, with everything that happened, the schedule change, moving it to the fall, it didn't have the same feel to me. It just didn't. And this year, you know, I'm like a kid in a candy store because it's back on the first Saturday in May where it should be. The mornings are still cool. The afternoons are starting to get warmer now. We're going to have a great weather week next week. Oaks and Derby Day look beautiful. Just fantastic. There's something different about having the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May. That's the only place it should be, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, last year, you know, given a global pandemic and everything that was going on in the world, you know, I'm just thankful that we were able to work with all the people in the state and local and health officials to be able to run the Kentucky Derby in September as we did. But, you know, we're back. Derby 147 with fans in the stands. Fans are the lifeblood of this industry, and especially the Derby itself. It's such a huge impact for our community, and it feels like the Derby this year, and thankfully so. And man, you're dodging forklifts and tents and all kinds of things around the Churchill Downs. So if you've ever been to the Kentucky Derby, you know how the Kentucky Derby is, with, you know, having all the mint julep stands and the cigar stands and all the things like that. It's back this year, and we couldn't be more thankful.
Yeah, well, listen, you have been busy. You have been tweeting videos of all of the contenders on the racetrack throughout the morning. You've been doing it ever since these Derby and Oaks contenders have arrived in Louisville. So take me through, let's start with this morning, and take me through the Derby horses we saw on the track. We have been, by the way, retweeting those on our HRN Twitter feed so people can catch them there too. But go ahead and update me on everything that's happened so far this morning.
Yeah, it was a busy morning this morning, and it was sort of, you know, each year when you lead into this last set of works for the Derby and Oaks contenders, usually this Saturday is the busiest day, and then there was a weather system that is moving into the area, but the weather keeps getting pushed back until later this afternoon, so a lot of the trainers actually were afraid that they could have inclement weather this morning. They moved up their works to have Friday works, but you had several Kentucky Derby and Oaks contenders on the track having their final works this morning, led off at 5:15 by Essential Quality, who worked outside of his stablemate, Spa City, also owned by Godolphin. They went a solid 5/8 in a minute and change. Then in the next set was Mandaloon, who worked with a horse from Brad Cox's barn named Joe Frazier, who recently won an allowance race at Keeneland. And Mandaloon has sort of been the buzz horse of the recent 2 weeks here at Churchill Downs, just because of the way that he's been doing, and I think he'll carry that tagline with him into the first Saturday in May, is just really making an impression to a lot of people over the track. Then about 15 minutes later, Superstock, who won the Arkansas Derby at an upset price, he worked with older horse Max Player, and you know, we'll see if they can shock the world again in the Kentucky Derby. And then there were a couple of works after the 7:30 renovation break from 7:30 to 7:45. Obviously, it's Oaks and Derby training for that 15-minute window for all the contenders that are based here. But they can go out earlier if they want. A lot of trainers like to stick to that earlier pattern, but some like to go during that 7:30 time period where we had King Fury, who just snuck into the Kentucky Derby yesterday with the defection of Dream Shake and Hosier. So he's now in the field of 20. He worked 5/8 with Brian Hernandez Jr. aboard. He's going to be a little bit of an interesting horse for a lot of people after he won the Lexington. His stablemate, Crazy Beautiful, the Gulfstream Park Oaks winner, who is in the Kentucky Oaks. She worked a half mile in 49 seconds just following King Fury. Millie Fuil, I think, is how you pronounce that name. Thank God I'm not Travis Stone, but I like to call her Millie Philly, as they do around the barn, who for trainer Bill Mott. She worked inside of a workmate, and they just sort of did a maintenance 5/8, but they went quick, 59-3. And one more horse that I'm missing, Highly Motivated, who worked outside of his stablemate. He's another horse that a lot of people, I think, will get some play at the windows after his runner-up effort to Essential Quality in the Bluegrass. So those were the Derby and Oaks contenders that we saw breeze over the track this morning. You know, when you look at the last work leading into the Kentucky Derby, not a lot really has to be done. As far as fitness levels, they're all pretty fit, so the trainers are just trying to keep them happy and healthy. But all the horses are converging here in Louisville, and we're absolutely excited to see that whole Derby field that we'll get here by Tuesday morning.
You mentioned, too, Kevin, that because of the weather forecast here in central Kentucky, many of the workouts that were scheduled for today moved up to yesterday. What can you tell me about what happened at Churchill Downs yesterday morning?
Yesterday we had 17 possible Derby and Oaks contenders that put in their final works here at the track. And, you know, it was almost as if that it was just nonstop action. And trainer Todd Pletcher, who originally had his quartet of Kentucky Derby contenders that were probably going to work on Saturday as he planned, he had to move up their works to Friday. And so we saw Known Agenda breeze with Sainthood. And then Dynamic One went with the horse that's going in the Pat Day Mile named Prime Factor. Those three horses breezed at 7:30. They all, you know, the Todd squad, every single horse that he sends out looks pretty good. And one of the horses that really kind of got a little bit of downgrading on from some of the Twitter handicappers out there was Bourbonic, who last week breezed with Dynamic One and got outworked by him. Dynamic One galloped out in front of him around the far turn. And so Todd decided to breeze Bourbonic by himself at 9 o'clock. After the second renovation break, and I probably just because, you know, he's the type of horse that likes to get into a more lengthier stride, takes him a little bit of time to get into a stride, so that's why I think Todd worked him by himself. And then he worked his likely Kentucky Oaks favorite, Malafat, who just looks phenomenal out here on the track. She worked during the 7:30 renovation break as well. The horses for Brad Cox, Travel Column, she went early. His other Oaks Philly coach went after the 7:30 renovation break. Trainer Mark Cassie's duo of Helium and Soup and Sandwich had their final works yesterday, just sort of maintenance breezes, but you could tell a horse like Soup and Sandwich wanted to do a little bit more out there, and Tyler Gaffleone had to have a strong hold of Soup and Sandwich to try and not gallop out too strongly outside of his stablemate Peace Achieved. Search Results worked outside of Dunbar Road. Chad Brown's horses sort of all work the same. They all work an easy 48 to 49 seconds, and they have just a really okay gallop out, I would say. Nothing too flashy, nothing that would catch the watch too much. Also had Ava's Grace and Keep Me in Mind for Robertino Diodoro. The list goes on and on, Mike. And Will Secret, who is another Oaks filly, went yesterday. I'll tell you what, it's when you were up there and there's 17 horses going in the mornings, it's sort of like controlled chaos. But yesterday it sort of felt like all the trainers were well planned and everything went to plan for the trainers leading up into the first Saturday in May. So almost as if nothing really went as a hiccup yesterday, and sort of this morning was the same feeling that I got from most of the trainers that worked their horses today.
You know, Kevin, when I asked you to come on the show, I was hoping that you were paying attention. You know, it just doesn't come through to me like you're paying attention. You have any clue what's going on with the Oaks and Derby horses?
I'll tell you what. It's we've got to know the Derby. We've got to know the Oaks. And it's just This field, I'll tell you what, Mike, it is one of the most competitive fields across both the Oaks and the Kentucky and the Derby. So I'll tell you what, it's been great to be able to see a lot of these horses up close and in person, because it's going to be two great betting races next week, and it's as competitive as I've seen in the more recent years.
Yeah, Kevin Kirstein, the Churchill Downs publicity manager, he is as good as it gets when it comes to keeping tabs on all the Oaks and the Derby contenders. Of course, that's his job. That's what he is paid to do, but he does it as good as anybody, and he is with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kevin, let's talk about the human side of things for a minute. You have guys like Bob Baffert and Todd Pletcher who are there. They have been there. They have done this. They know the drill. You have Brad Cox, who comes in looking to saddle his first Kentucky Derby starter. And not only that, he could have up to three horses in the Kentucky Derby and the Derby favorite in essential quality. How's Brad holding up so far in Louisville?
I'll tell you what, Brad is cool as a cucumber. It is unbelievable to see this guy's work ethic. You know, when he won the Kentucky Oaks a couple of years ago with Monomoy Girl, he was here the very next morning working about 30 horses in his barn. I mean, he just doesn't take a day off. He doesn't take a breather, but he is as cool as it gets. And you could tell this morning he was a little bit amped up at 5:15 when he had the folks from Judmont from Mandaloon and the folks from Godolphin both standing next to him in the grandstand watching the final works. And he worked two sets of horses, one at 5:15 and then another set right around 5:30. And after those 5:30 workers, he didn't have any more workers for the day. And you could tell he took a big sigh of relief and he said, thank God that's over. And so I think he was a little bit amped up this morning, but as of right now, he's feeling pretty good. And you mentioned Todd Pletcher, who is in town for 2 weeks this year. You don't really see Todd come into town for 2 weeks, and he had two works over the track, and it's been great to see Todd here. He's another one of those that doesn't really take a day off. I saw him back there yesterday afternoon at feed time, and you don't see a lot of trainers come back in the afternoon to feed their horses, but he was there at the barn watching his horses grade and walk the shed row and for feed time. And, you know, these guys are just consummate professionals, and Brad Cox is one of those, and hoping to become the first Louisville native trainer to win the Kentucky Derby.
I had mentioned a short time ago that Medina Spirit was scheduled to arrive around 1 p.m. Eastern yesterday afternoon. Did he get in okay?
He got in okay. He was out there this morning. He jogged around the one lap with the pony, and so he's here in Louisville, and he will probably gallop tomorrow. I think Bob arrives tomorrow as well, and so it sort of feels like Derby when the white-haired legend Bob Baffert arrives into Louisville, and he's going to send a pretty strong hand in the undercard races as well with Gamine, who can likely – he's trying to become the all-time leading Grade 1 winner in the country, tied Dwayne Lucas, and so now he's going to try and win that with Gamine in the Derby City Distaff next week, and of course Medina Spirit if he can upset in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, who would bet against the guy? He came here last year with just two horses, 1,000 words, an authentic 1,000 words. Ended up, as we know, flipping in the paddock when he came in, and he was scratched, so he was down to authentic. He wins it. So don't bet against Bob Baffert, six-time Derby winner, coming up next Saturday. You mentioned Mandaloon, a horse that's somewhat of a buzz horse, if you will. And every year there's that horse that gets to Louisville. Maybe he wasn't in the best of form necessarily in his previous outing, but he just blossoms. Is Mandaloon that horse this year?
You know, he's starting to feel that way. The only concern that I have as a gambler is you look at his last race in the Louisiana Derby and you say, just what happened? In all accounts, he's looked as good going into that race, and it's just such a head-scratching race. And, you know, as when you handicap races, horses are allowed to lose races, but you know, when you lose like that, it just always gives you a little bit of heartburn when you want to try and back that horse again. But he has looked the absolute picture. He's a gorgeous son of Into Mischief for Judmont. And, you know, he started about six lengths behind his workmate Joe Frazier this morning. I talked to Florent Giroux, who worked Mandaloon, and he said, you know, he doesn't have as bit of early speed as Joe Frazier did, and Joe Frazier was a little bit headstrong going into the pole, and so Flo just didn't want to try and catch up as quickly to Joe Frazier to not really get him into the bit too early. But he said once he settled in and got around the turn, he was just gobbling up ground and couldn't be getting over the track any better. And so, you know, he's the deserved buzz horse of this year's Kentucky Derby. But as a gambler, you always want to go back and look at that previous race in the Louisiana Derby, and Brad Cox doesn't even know what happened in that race. And so to back him, to me, in the Kentucky Derby after that race is, you know, I'm a little on the fence about that one, but he couldn't look any better on the track.
Well, Kevin, I'm down to the final minute and a half. I told you we get a chance to look ahead to opening night tonight and the meet in general. So give me a capsulized version of what folks can expect later this evening and looking ahead to the spring meet.
You know, Derby Week kicks off with opening night here at Churchill Downs. And 6 o'clock first post, you can watch all the action on the Fox Sports family of networks. And a solid 10-race card to kick off Kentucky Derby Week. The featured race is the William Walker Overnight Stakes. And I'll tell you what, the money is just flowing in to our purse account here at Churchill Downs due to the returns of Derby City Gaming, the historical horse racing facility just down the road here from Churchill Downs. And, you know, we're going to have main special weight races after Derby, $100,000, allowance races up into the 100 and teens. I'll tell you what, the lots of money for lots of great quality horses that will be here in Kentucky. And of course the gambling, the Derby City Six, which was formerly known as the Single Six Jackpot, that 20 cent low takeout 15% wager was gets gamblers all excited to play that because of the low takeout. 90% gets paid out every day, and I think it's the best bet that we have to offer here at Churchill Downs because of that return. 90% paid out, 10% in the carryover, and of course if there are no winning combinations, the entire pool gets carried over to the next day. If there's one winning ticket, of course, you take down the entire jackpot. And so the Derby City Six kicks off here on opening night, but will be a mandatory payout on Kentucky Derby Day on Saturday, May the 1st.
Kevin Kirstein, ladies and gentlemen, Churchill Downs publicity manager, does a fantastic job. Kevin, I'll look forward to seeing you when we get over there early next week. Our coverage kicks off Tuesday morning with the first of three Derby countdown shows presented by Hillandale. That all comes up 8 a.m. Tuesday morning, and can't wait to be there in Louisville, Kentucky, and get ready for the Kentucky Derby. Enjoy it.
Thanks, Mike. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
All right, Kevin Kirstein here on HRRN. It is time now for your weekly Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time for today's first bet and a visit with the folks from Farm Paint, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This man was born not far from Monticello, Virginia, on June 26, 1875. His father had come from Louisiana to defend the Southern flag and stayed on to rebuild from the ashes of a totally decimated Southern way of life. His mother was the daughter of a man of property and slaves and was the arch prototype of Southern aristocracy. As a young man, he was raised among the horses of Ellerslie, his father's estate, horses with names like Scathelock, Aeolus, and Aeoli. His respect for the fineness of the equine breed was there informed and was, in fact, an integral part of his life forever. He went to school for his first 12 years in a one-room brick schoolhouse under private tutelage at Ellerslie. He began his college matriculation at the tender age of 15 at Johns Hopkins, but finished that portion of his education at the University of Chicago circa 1895. He went to work on the farm of his father and chose farming and the breeding of horses as a way of life. He became a junior partner in Ellerslie and stayed at the breeding and selling of yearlings until 1907, when he came to Lexington, Kentucky to judge a horse show, met his future wife, Nancy, and thereby sealed his future. They were married in 1908. They had a son in 1910. His wife's both parents died in that year of 1910, and she thereby inherited 847 acres of the family farm, Marchmont, which later became Claiborne. He settled into raising tobacco and breeding thoroughbreds there. His first stallion was named Celt, and then Rack, a stallion he and a friend purchased in England, was added. Later, he purchased a mare at auction by the name of Mary Frances from one James Benali Hagen. War, the one which was to have ended all wars, came in the second decade of the century, and this man brought several stallions quite thriftily in England at the time. His well-founded thoroughbred empire well on its way. As years went by, standing at Claiborne were the likes of Ambassador Four, Jim Gaffney, Omar Khayyam, Warcloud, Stimulus, Starhawk, Brown Bud, Gallant Fox, Toro, Raycount, Omaha, Pompey, and Sir Galahad III plus, Johnstown, Blenheim II, and Rhodes Scholar. His name was at the top of the list 5 times in money won by produce and 9 times in total money won. He sold Ellerslie, his Virginia birthplace, in 1946, and it was not long until Nasrullah was added to the already illustrious list of Claiborne sires. He was a mainstay of the Saratoga sales over the years, and not only helped organize but became president of the Breeders' Sales Company. He had been ill for several years before succumbing to the Grim Reaper, so to speak, on Monday, April 1, 1957, as an octogenarian. This tall Virginian with the omnipresent silver-crested hickory stick always wanted to leave everything in better shape than when he found it. More than one person has known they were much the better for having simply known him. He was, you see, of the breed that held a genuine courtliness and all that went with it. Good blood, kindness, courage, hospitality, and a genuine deep affection for things of beauty. He left an enormous imprint on all of that which thoroughbreds and thoroughbred racing stand for. He was Arthur Boyd Hancock Sr.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Catholic boy, one of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win grade ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretariat. A six-time graded stakes winner from ages 2 to 4, he was the fastest three-year-old of his crop over 10 furlongs. In foal to Catholic Boy, the Dam of Swiss Skydiver sold for $950,000. Dual surface grade one winner Catholic Boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park is now open to the general public by visiting santaanita.com/open. Walk-up admission is not yet available, so be sure to make reservations in advance. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live. Join us in person or online this Saturday as our main event is the Grade 2 $200,000 Santa Margarita Stakes for fillies and mares at a mile and one-eighth. Our supporting feature Saturday is the $100,000 Crystal Water for California breds at 1 mile on turf. And fans, make plans to join us for live racing next Friday, April 30th, as the Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks will headline an outstanding simulcast card from Churchill Downs. First post time this weekend is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Such an exciting time to be a fan of this sport of thoroughbred racing, and I hope you're enjoying this show, and I hope you're enjoying Derby Week, which kicks off. Well, you know, you think about the Derby Racing Festival and all the things that take place couple of weeks out. Today is the Derby Marathon, too, the half marathon, I guess it is, as the runners wind through Churchill Downs and all those types of things. So a lot of things taking place in Louisville and throughout Central Kentucky to celebrate the Run for the Roses. Great time to be a horse racing fan, and happy to have you back with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. It is time now to get you ready to bet the races today by taking a look at today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 9 at Pimlico. 5:04 Eastern is the post. It's number 2, Fraudulent Charge, who is 5-2 on the morning line. Fraudulent Charge has a 37% win projection from first bet, rates a whopping 22 points higher than the next closest competitor. She ranks in the top 3 in 8 of the leading 15 first bet factors for this race and has been first or second in all 4 career starts. The filly by Will Take Charge is bred to want the additional distance, and the bet mix stat, trainer Lacey Gaudette has 5 wins and 3 seconds in 15 dirt route starts at Pimlico since 2013. Number 2, Fraudulent Charge, is today's first bet. I'm back in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Beginning next Saturday morning, this show for the entire month of May will be presented by our good friends at farmpaint.com. And for many years now, I have had the privilege on this particular show to visit with the folks at Farm Paint and to get you ready for everything you need to know about getting your barns, your fences, your farms ready for the spring and for the summer seasons. And earlier this week, Lori Douglas and Bethany Walton stopped in to the studio for an interview. And here's what they had to say about Farm Paint. Lori, I think we've been doing this now 7, 8, maybe 9 years. I don't know, but always a delight to see you.
Always a delight to see you, and looking forward to our time together.
Yeah, of course. And every year we kind of joke about trying to make talking about paint sexy on the radio. How do we do it? What's new? What's happening? And every year you come up with different things that always catch me off guard, because there's always something new happening at farmpaint.com.
Absolutely. Always something new, and I'm ready to rock and roll whenever you are.
What has the past year been like for you and the team at Farm Paint?
It has actually been amazing. We probably had our best year ever. The pandemic did not affect us. We did amazing. I mean, we sold paint like it was water, actually.
Probably because of the fact that most people were staying home, they were staying at the farm, they were doing renovations. Is that part of the reason?
Yes, yes, indeed. They all had time to look at their farms, to look at, you know, the maintenance that needed to be done. And, I mean, the phone rang off the hook.
There is much more to Farm Paint than just the paint products themselves. You tell me every year that you view yourself as almost a consultant for many farms and for many people that are using the product, right?
Yes, yes. The key to getting a good fence painting job, barn painting job, roof job, it's truly all about how much product you use. You have to put enough paint on. You have to paint in the correct weather. You know, you have to make sure you're using the right size tips. You know, all of that involved is a good paint job.
How have you been able, because so much of what you do is personal contact. You love to be out at the farms. You love to talk to people in person. With the pandemic, we haven't been able to do that. How have you been able to continue to do your job, educate people about the product, but do it as a socially distanced type of proposition?
It's been a little difficult, but as you well know, I'm really good on the phone. So I kept in contact with all of my farms, all of my managers, kept in contact with of course, all of my contractors. Contractors are very big for us. I always made time to answer the phone when need be.
If people were to go to farmpaint.com, they're going to see a litany of different products that you offer. Talk about some of those products.
Yes, we sell barn and fence paints. We sell roof coatings, elastomeric white roof coatings, aluminum roof coatings. We sell concrete sealer. I mean, we sell Thor turf. We sell a synthetic dustless arena footing. We have a fibered one. We have a non-fibered one. We're a one-stop shop for the farm.
So not just about paint.
Not just about paint.
You mentioned the name Thor Turf, and I know you have a great story. We were talking about it before we started the interview about a big occurrence that took place this past year for Thor Turf.
Yes, indeed. We actually sold about almost 1,000 tons of Thor turf to the World Equestrian Center in Ocala, Florida. They love it. It's amazing. I went out to view it. We have got many phone calls off of that install, so we're pretty excited about that.
Thor turf sounds like a great name because it sounds like a very tough, durable type of product. There are people listening right now going, all right, I get paint, but what on earth is Thor turf? So what is it?
Thor turf is basically it's a silica sand coated with a polymer with cotton fiber in it. So it is 100% dust-free. You will never, ever, for the life of the product, have to ever water for dust issues.
Is that a big deal with products like that?
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
And I guess it prevents slipping as well? Is
right.
that part of it?
Yeah, no slipping, drains beautifully. As long as your base drains, the footing will drain.
What about the paint side of things? Tell me a bit more about Farm Paint itself and those products and what sets them apart from other ordinary paint that you might put out there.
Yeah, you know, our paint, we have the best product out on the market. I mean, honestly, we've designed all of our paints with a very unique elastomeric polymer and a UV inhibitor. All of that being said, the paint has a lot of stretch to it. So it really does soak into the wood. It allows it to expand and shrink in the different weather patterns so you don't get chipping, popping, peeling. More importantly, you get no fading. A lot of asphalt-based, lacquer-based, oil-based products will tend to fade out in the sun, and ours does not. So that's been huge for us. And it, you know, we sell this product to so many of the high-end farms all over the country, you know, beautiful Keeneland, all that black fence in front of Keeneland is our best-selling product, which is our FP300 acrylic fence and barn paint.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, too. You don't have to be local here in Kentucky or in Ohio to access Farm Paint. They do ship all over the country, all over the world. Didn't you tell me that you were working with some folks in Vietnam and shipping them product, too?
We are. I just got a big order the other day, and just got an email at midnight last night from Japan. But we do ship in Dubai, so anyways.
Yeah, fantastic. And people can go to farmpaint.com if they want to learn more about some of the products that we're talking about. As a matter of fact, all of the products have information on their website. You can also find the phone number, an 800 number that you can use. It rings right to Lori's cell phone. You tell me that every year. So it's very – this is a company that is very personalized, right? And you take a lot of pride in that, Lori.
Oh, yes, indeed. I've been working for this company for – almost 15 years, and it's an amazing company. Employees are treated very, very, very well. And once again, they're a huge company that loves the horse. I can promise you that. And they love the animal, dogs, cats, all about them.
Nothing lasts forever. And at some point, Lori Douglas is going to decide, hey, you know what? Enough's enough. It's time to spend time with my family. There has to be an heir apparent somewhere to take over for me, and that is why she has brought on board Bethany Walton, who has a litany in this thoroughbred business, a resume, I should say, that is pretty impressive, and she is here too. I got to tell you, I have never felt more like a thorn between two roses than I do here today. Bethany, happy to have you in studio with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Take me through your background a little bit. You were just hired by Farm Paint about a week ago.
I was.
Tell me a little bit more about your background.
I moved to Lexington in 2003 to go to UK. When I got here, I grew up on a quarter horse farm, born and raised. When I got here, it was a very culture shock for me. And so I reached out. I just needed to be around horses. I needed to be around country. And so I started on Darby Dan and started grooming horses. And I've just kind of worked my way up from there.
What were you doing with the quarter horses?
I barrel raced. I grew up barrel racing. My family and I, we went all over the country and we did it as a family. And my family still does it. So
when you started with Darby Dan, was the grooming side of things new for you, or had you been doing that all along with your own horses?
Well, so I had been on horse farms my whole life with quarter horses, and so I really didn't think there was much for me to learn. But the thoroughbred is a different animal, and so I learned a plethora of things that I wouldn't have learned anywhere else. And I'm very grateful for that, and just kept going and ended up you know, I've been with numerous farms throughout my time here, and now I'm with Lori at Farm Paint.
You said you spent some time working with my good friend Michael Hernan over at Gainesway. Of course, he has now left, started his own bloodstock operation, but you spent time with Michael too.
I did. I worked under Michael at Gainesway. I was writing stallion contracts and booking the stallions there. I enjoyed my time at Gainesway very much. Michael taught me a lot. I'm very appreciative to him. But it led me to have a lot of great contacts in this industry. And again, that's kind of what led me to Lori and how we met.
For anybody that thinks when you pick up the phone and you call them or you do eventually go out to see people in person that you don't know anything about the horse business and that you don't still have ties to the thoroughbred industry and to the farms, they couldn't be more wrong because your husband is also the stallion manager over at Hillandale.
He is. He is. He's been with Hillandale 3 or 4 years now. We've just moved to the Paris location at Alapa, and he is the stallion manager there, has 16 wonderful stallions, and we're very happy to be there. And so we do have ties within the thoroughbred industry, and it goes way back.
What do you expect your role to be with Farm Paint?
Eventually, Lori would like me to be her heir, as you said. The next Lori Douglas. Again, big shoes to fill. Right now, my main goal is to get out here, get on the farms, introduce myself as the new Farm Paint girl, and just make myself accessible and be with the farms and, you know, let them know that I'm just a phone call away as well.
Yeah, maybe eventually take over that role for Lori Douglas. We'll see. Who knows where this
I'm
journey takes
I'm not going anywhere.
Us, yeah,
you're
here for a while.
I'm here for a while.
You're here for a while, which is good because you'll have somebody to learn from and learn the business and learn the products, and that's always huge.
It's going to take me 5 years to get her there.
Why was Bethany the right fit?
You know, I met Bethany, oh gosh, it's probably been 8 or 9 years ago. I'll never forget when I first walked into Judmont Farms. She was this beautiful little girl sitting at the desk, and every time I would walk in, she just had this huge, gorgeous smile, and she made me feel at home. She just was beaming, bouncy, energy, just loved her to death. And, you know, we had just known each other the whole time. And she called me a couple years ago to get paint for her father. And at that time, I knew she had taken a little leave of absence to be a mom for a few years. And she always had told me, you know, she's like, yeah, this is what I need to do. And I said, oh, my God, enjoy it. It's going to be the best time of your life. But she had always told me, she goes, it's going to be hard for me, though. I'm a working girl. You know, I'm definitely going to want to come back at, you know, at some point. And I always remembered that and kept it in my mind and wasn't quite sure she was ready to come back. But when I knew what my head honcho wanted me to bring on board, I thought, I wonder if Bethany would be interested. So that's how it all came down.
What went through your mind when you got the phone call from Lori that she had chosen you to be the next Farm Paint rep?
Well, when you step away from the workforce after working your whole life, you kind of feel forgotten. So when I got the phone call from Lori that she did remember me, that I did make an impression on her, and that she came after me and she chose me, it gave me a sense of pride and it gave me a sense of accomplishment. And I was like, I'm going to do everything I can, obviously talk it over with my family, but I'm going to make her proud. And I hope, you know, so far I've been with her a week. I actually started working before I was hired, quote unquote. just trying to, you know, prove that she had made the right decision and that, you know, that I was a good fit for her.
We've only known each other about 15 minutes or so, Bethany, but I can tell you just your persona, the way you present yourself, I think you did make the right decision. And I know you're going to do great with Farm Paint. And Lori, I know that you're going to continue to build upon everything that Farm Paint stands for. There's also a second side of Farm Paint, if you will, another company that is called Tenda. We advertise for Tenda here on the program too. Tell me just a little bit about Tenda for people that aren't familiar with that product.
Yes, our Tenda line, it's tendahorse.com. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to our website, we sell everything from poultices to liniments to shampoos to salves and hoof oils and BNMA pastes and just anything and everything a veterinarian would want or a farm would want, big local farm stores would want, corporate headquarters would want. You know, it's an amazing company.
And we built a 25,000 square foot manufacturing building in Sandusky, Ohio for Tenda. It's amazing. It's doing great. We're building every year. It's an amazing product. We have really awesome labels too.
Well, I need to say thank you to you and to the team at Farm Paint and Tenda for all of your support of what we do here on the network. Our Equine Forum program on Saturday morning is going to be presented by Farm Paint once again this year for the entire month of May. It begins on Derby Day, May 1st. What a way to kick it off. This will be the 7th or 8th consecutive year that we've done this together, and I can't thank you enough for all your support, and love having you in studio with me every year.
Oh, likewise, Mike, and thank you very much.
And we'll tell people farmpaint.com is where they can go if you want to learn more about the products. If you want to get in touch with Lori, there is an 800 number at the top of the homepage. Call that number. It goes right to her phone. And eventually, you're going to be hearing from Bethany Walton as well. Bethany, really appreciate you stopping in.
Thanks for having me.
All the best with the new job.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
When I come back, I'll get you set for the second hour, hour two of three here this morning on the Equine Forum. It begins with Keeneland announcer and our HRRN colleague, Kurt Becker. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown. Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Cyrus Sires Taprit to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
So I could play sports and see my friends without having to worry about anything.
I'm ready for concerts to be back and just have a life again.
So I can actually eat pizza at my favorite pizza place.
Because I'm ready to travel again.
So that I can sit on the couch, read my granddaughter books, and hug her when there's a happy ending.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bobby Newman. Join me next week for the Derby Countdown right here on HRRN. Jude Feld and I will broadcast live from Churchill Downs, and we'll bring you up-to-the-minute reports on the Kentucky Derby, as well as featured interviews with trainers, jockeys, owners, and other racing insiders. The Derby Countdown, presented by Hillendale Farms, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Tuesday through Thursday of Derby Week, on Sirius 216, XM 202, and streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
The most exciting 2 minutes in sports.
Mind that Bird has won the Kentucky Derby. An impossible result here.
And it is all Barbaro in a sublime performance. But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby. American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby.
The Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 1st, beginning at 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on HRRN.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Strike the gold on the outside with Chris Adley taking command. Along the inside, Best Pal into the second spot. Main Minister is third. Coming 70 yards to the finish and far away from the rail. Strike the gold wins the Derby by a length and a half. Under the wire, second was Best Pal. Then it was a photograph between the long shot, Main Minister, and from far back. Green Alligator was in the photo for the show spot. And the time on the board, a slow derby, 2:03, but strike the gold. Strikes the roses this afternoon.
30 years ago, Dave Johnson had the call of strike the gold, winning the Kentucky Derby for Hall of Famer Nick Zito. His first Kentucky Derby win, what a moment it was. Strike the gold, the last horse to come from the Bluegrass and win the Kentucky Derby. I don't mean to come through the Bluegrass. There have been three since Strike the Gold who have run in the race and won the Kentucky Derby. But the last horse to win both was Strike the Gold 30 years ago. Now, the Bluegrass Stakes has had 23 Kentucky Derby winners, second only to the Florida Derby. But, boy, that's a long drought in between that daily double of pulling off the Bluegrass and the Kentucky Derby. This year, the champion of Central Quality has a chance to do it. The Derby favorite has a chance to do it. And I think you can draw a line through a lot of the horses that ran at Keeneland in the Bluegrass Stakes when the Poly track was in place. Horrible experiment. Didn't work. The quality of horses, not Derby quality. And now that we're back to conventional dirt at Keeneland, you're starting to see horses like Essential Quality come through there and really be considered major players when they get to Louisville a few weeks later. Should be a lot of fun. We'll see if Essential Quality can pull it off next Saturday. Of course, we'll be there all week long with the coverage for you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It begins on Tuesday morning with the first of three Derby Countdown shows presented by Hillendale Farms. Those come your way 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. A different SiriusXM channel for those three shows, by the way. You'll want to tune in to Sirius 216, XM 202. Sirius 216, XM 202 for those three Derby Countdown shows, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman, Jude Feld will host that show, and they will get you ready for the Run for the Roses. Friday, we're back to Sirius 219, XM 201, the same channel you're listening to right now, for our coverage of the Kentucky Oaks from 3 to 6 Eastern. Saturday morning, next Saturday, I will host this show live from Churchill, 8 to 11 a.m., and then we'll get into the Derby undercard coverage from 3 to 5 and our exclusive radio coverage of the 147th Run for the Roses in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network, which, by the way, presented by our friends at Twin Spires. That comes up at 5 o'clock Eastern time. And you can find a list of affiliates, several terrestrial affiliates across the country. You're going to be picking that one up in addition to SiriusXM. So you can head over to our website, see the SiriusXM information, and check out the listing of affiliates at horseracingradio.net. And, of course, you can listen to every single show that we do from Churchill live on our website, streaming free at horseracingradio.net. All right, I'm back with hour number two. Right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. Just days before it opens its doors in 2021, and a week out from hosting the 147th running of the Kentucky Derby presented by Woodford Reserve, Churchill Downs Racetrack announced purses will be raised an additional $3.1 million thanks to booming business from historical racing machines for their spring-summer meet, which starts today. Total purses offered in the first condition book for horsemen, which covers 190 races over 19 dates through Thursday, May 27th, have grown to over $22 million for a daily average of just over $1.2 million. Maiden special weight races are now worth $115,000 for Derby week, while allowance races in that time range from $118,000 to $125,000. Purses for 25 stakes races were boosted as well. The 40-day spring meet stakes schedule now totals just over $14 million. That spring meet runs from today through Sunday, June 26th. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Hour 2 of 3, a very busy morning for you. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interview with Kevin Kirstein from Churchill Downs talking about all the Oaks and Derby workers and even some of the human connections involved with those horses and how they're holding up with 7 days until the Run for the Roses. All you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure, listen to all those interviews. You have plenty of time to do it. And by the way, when you're over at our website, check out the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. That show is where Anthony and Bobby, Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman, get you ready for the weekend's big races every single Friday. They do it live at 6 p.m. Eastern time every Friday afternoon. And then, of course, you can check out the podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net. Edging ever closer to that first Saturday in May. Forget about 7 days. We're 7 days, 9 hours, 40 minutes, and 21 seconds until the Run for the Roses. I'm going to talk with Kurt Becker coming up momentarily. He will sit beside me in the booth for our broadcast of the Run for the Roses next Saturday afternoon. That team also includes Dan Mason. It includes Tom Leach, the voice of the UK Wildcats, and former jockey Jeff Bloom, probably most famous for owning Champion Midnight Bisou. He'll be part of that broadcast team as well. Should be a lot of fun as we make our way toward the first Saturday in May next Saturday. Poll question today. So many of you taking time to weigh in. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. You can email me, too, if you don't do social media, mike@horseracingradio.net. Let me know your thoughts. What's your favorite way to bet the Kentucky Derby? Here's a few choices. Win, place, or show. Exacta, trifecta, superfecta. Oaks, Derby, double, or other. And if you do choose other, please let me know what other way you prefer to bet the Kentucky Derby. Right now, 47% of HRN Nation saying they'll go with the exacta, the trifecta, and the superfecta. I couldn't agree more. As you know, I am a trifecta guy. I like to play trifectas. I love to try to make a big score on the Kentucky Derby, kick in as many long shots as I can for the third position and hope for a bomb. Doesn't usually work out because in order to win, you got to pick the winner too, which is where I run into trouble. But anyway, exacta, tri, super, 47% of you saying that's the way you like to play the Kentucky Derby. A couple of comments, multi-race wagers leading into the Kentucky Derby. And Road Warrior chimes in and says to skip it and save money. Come on, where's the fun in that? Although I do have a couple of futures going this year. There's another way to play it. Maybe you like to play it with the future bets. Keep them coming. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And, of course, you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. My good friend Kurt Becker, who will sit alongside me in the booth next Saturday, is with me now here on HRRN. Good morning, my friend.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Good to be with you.
I am doing very well. I guess the question is, how are you? I know that you're taking in a little different. You know, a rolling stone gathers no moss, Kurt, and you finished calling the races at Keeneland yesterday on closing day. You are now in Talladega getting ready for the NASCAR event coming up this weekend, and then you'll be right back here at Keeneland again for the horse sale on Monday and back over with us next week. I don't know how you're doing it, but, man, happy to have you as part of the team.
Well, it's good to be part of the team. And, yeah, after the last race at Keeneland yesterday, I jumped in the car and got on Interstate 65 and drove down through the Nashville area and then hit Interstate 20 and hooked over to the east to Talladega. I tell you one problem they're going to have, at least today, for the NASCAR Xfinity Series is rain. It has rained all morning. It's overcast. It's supposed to be wall-to-wall rain throughout the day. So we could end up with a doubleheader with the Xfinity and the Cup Series tomorrow. You know, I always like to tease my friends in the NASCAR world. I tell them in the horse business, we race in the rain all the time. And I also tell them, you know, when you guys get all excited about dirt racing, we race on dirt quite a bit in our business also. So I always get a kick out of, you know, having a little fun with them on that.
Yeah, you know, listen, there are NASCAR and that horsepower is so much fun to watch. And especially, I've been to a couple of races. It's fun to watch in person, much like horse racing. You can watch it on TV. That's cool because you may have a bet on a horse. But watching it, there's nothing like watching live sports in person, is there?
That is true. And I think that the competitive spirit carries over. I get a kick out of talking to the competitors in NASCAR, drivers and crew chiefs, and hearing about their respect and their regard for what happens in horse racing. And I know that next weekend, when NASCAR is out in Kansas City, there will be guys that'll gather around, men and women in the NASCAR world, that will, you know, huddle up near a TV when the horses are going in the gate for the Derby. I think one of the best comments I've ever heard, Calvin Borrell made the comment. In fact, it was right after an HRRN morning show from the backstretch during Derby week a few years ago. I told Calvin, I said, I've talked to NASCAR drivers who marvel at what jockeys do, because from a race car driver's perspective, they are amazed that jockeys have no roll cage around them. They've got no head and neck safety restraint, and they've got tremendous respect for what men and women do as jockeys. And I got a kick out of Calvin. He said, I appreciate that. He said, you can tell those race car drivers I don't want to go no 200 miles an hour either.
Yeah, so true. Kurt Becker with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kurt, we'll talk about some of the top Derby storylines that you'll be keeping an eye on as we move closer to that first Saturday in May, and of course the post time coming up next Saturday. But before I do, I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate you publicly here on the show on a tremendous milestone yesterday at Keeneland. You completed your 25th consecutive year as the announcer at Keeneland. That is pretty special, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that, and the folks at Keeneland were very kind. They surprised me with a ceremony in the winner's circle after the third race yesterday, and presented me with a Keeneland Julep Cup, just like they award to the winners of races at Keeneland. So that was a lot of fun, and Keeneland it's such a privilege to call races there, and Keeneland being Keeneland, even after now in my 25th season, there's not a day that goes by that I still don't get butterflies in the stomach walking through the gate there, because it's just such a marvelous environment for racing. It really is.
I mentioned earlier that the last horse to win both the Bluegrass Stakes and the Kentucky Derby was Strike the Gold 30 years ago, 1991. This will be the 30-year anniversary of that tremendous performance. Essential Quality, the winner of the Bluegrass this year, the likely Derby favorite. Kurt, what did you see from him when you called the Bluegrass Stakes that makes you think that drought can come to an end?
Well, so often, Mike, we tend to look at horses that are flashy, that overpower the competition, especially in their final race before the Derby. And there will be folks, no doubt, that will look at the fact that Essential Quality only won the Bluegrass by a neck, and they might have some concern about that. But what I saw that day was I saw a horse that I think Essential Quality was perhaps caught off guard by the fact he wasn't able just to run right by Highly Motivated at will. He had to fight. He had to dig in. He had to go to work. What I liked about it was I think that as he crossed the wire and then on the gallop out, it really helped his confidence level. He looked like just his reaction to it, one could almost see in the way he carried himself that he knew he had accomplished something that day. And Chad Brown is very good, the trainer of Highly Motivated. Chad is very good at getting horses ready to run in the Bluegrass. He won it with Good Magic. He was runner-up with a huge long shot a few years ago, My Man Sam. He was runner-up with Practical Joke a few years ago, who people said that at the time they didn't think was a two-turn horse. So Chad's very good at getting a horse ready for that particular race. My take on it has been that if you're Brad Cox and the team with Essential Quality, they might look back and say that Chad Brown did them a big favor by providing such a stout opposition in that race to teach Essential Quality before the Derby. There are going to be times you have to fight, and I think Essential Quality learned that.
You also got to call another horse that has now made his way into the Kentucky Derby. That is the Ken McPeak-trained King Fury. He draws in after a couple of defections yesterday. What'd you see from King Fury that makes you think, okay, maybe there's a chance?
Well, I thought that he got a great ride that day, hugged the rail, and was able especially to save some ground around the far turn. And I would have thought that maybe that the connections would have held out and just gone ahead and focused on the Preakness, given the shorter distance as compared to the Derby, given the fact that the Lexington is a mile and a 16th. But listen, I'm going to confess, I'm also a guy that said that Kenny McPeak should not have run the filly in the Preakness last year. So, and we know how that turned out. I got a kick out of it because Kenny, I ran into him not long after the Preakness, and he laughed, and in a good-natured way, he said, "Why don't you stick to calling races and let me train my horses?" So lesson learned on that one. But you know, it's the Derby. I mean, anything's possible. I think the horse is fit and good and ready, and he's earned the right to be in the race, and we'll see what happens.
Kurt, we'll be together 5:00 Eastern next Saturday. That's when we kick off our exclusive radio coverage of the Kentucky Derby. We've been doing it together since 2011, and we'll do that in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. It's all presented by Twin Spires. What are some of the other storylines? And there seems to be something for everybody with this year's Derby field, both on the human and the equine side. What are some of the other storylines that you'll have your eye on as we get ready for that coverage?
Well, one of the storylines that jumps out to me is the fact that this is a Derby where Bob Baffert is not dominating the storylines, and his horse Medina Spirit has not really been at the forefront of a lot of discussion about the Derby, and probably, as Baffert horses go, will go off at a decent price. I don't know, maybe 8 to 12 to 1, somewhere in there. Consistent horse. Has given a good account of himself in most of his races. Arguably could be a factor in this race. I don't know that he will win it, but could get a piece of it. I think that another interesting story, speaking of Bob Baffert, is you look at Bob Baffert and his jockey, John Velasquez. I wasn't aware until somebody mentioned this to me last night, that you have to go back, I believe, to Lucien Lauren and Ron Turcotte with Riva Ridge and Secretariat to find the last trainer-jockey combo that teamed up to win back-to-back editions of the Kentucky Derby. And then, you know, beyond that, I mean, Rock Your World. Look, I know when it comes to the Derby, we talk about trainers, we talk about jockeys, horses, owners. We don't often talk about breeders, the folks that actually sit down and make the decision to take a particular mare and mate her to a particular stallion. But I think that with Ron McAnally being the breeder of Rock Your World, and with that horse being on the upswing right now, here you've got this legendary trainer who didn't run a lot of horses in the Derby, never won the Kentucky Derby, now could end up being the breeder of a Kentucky Derby winner. That might not be a story that resonates with the general public that tunes in once a year. I think that's a story that could resonate big time with folks within the industry.
No doubt about it. We are actually producing a nice feature on Ron McAnally and that whole storyline behind Rock Your World. I think it's fantastic. Ron, 0-10 as a trainer in the Kentucky Derby, could get his first win as a breeder. Boy, wouldn't that be something? That would be spectacular. And there, you know, they say there wouldn't be a dry eye in the house. There wouldn't be a dry eye in many parts of California. And Ron, of course, grew up in an orphanage here in Kentucky. So many great sidebars to that story, too, Kurt, would be tremendous. And back to Bob Baffert for just a quick second. I said this earlier. This kind of has the look of last year to me. It's very similar. You remember last year, he was loaded in the spring. He had Charlatan. He had Nadal. He had Thousand Words. Authentic. Eight Rings was another horse people were talking about. This year, similar. Life is Good, Concert Tour, Medina Spirit. Last year, he ended up with just Authentic in the starting gate. Medina Spirit going to be his one starter this year. And we were saying the same thing about Authentic. Well, good horse. Yeah, he ran great in the Haskell. Maybe he can get a piece. Not sure if he can win it, especially with the post position. We're saying the same thing about Medina Spirit. You just can't overlook Bob Baffert. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's true. And there might be a parallel with Authentic last year, in the sense that Authentic was a horse that really had to have the lead. And, of course, Johnny V took him right to the front and kept him there and measured it just perfectly and got the win in the Derby. And I wonder about Medina Spirit. I think that the case can be made. He might be a similar horse. I would be interested to see what would happen if he's able to get to the front. The only challenge there is the conventional wisdom seems to be that there's going to be, you know, a lot of horses that are going to want to contest that early pace in the Derby this year. But he, you know, Bob Baffert is a guy that, anybody that's won six Kentucky Derbies, speaking of NASCAR analogies, I compare Bob quite often to Jimmy Johnson. You look at Jimmy, who won seven NASCAR Cup Series titles and peeled off, what, five in a row at one point. And I remember that there were, you know, it's natural for sports fans when someone starts to dominate, they'll say, oh, gosh, it's him again. I'd like to see somebody else win. And as I've told somebody, whether it was Jimmy Johnson during his run, whether it's Bob Baffert in his current run in the Derby, maybe the way to look at it is, you know, as fans of the game, we're seeing something that's very rare in the industry. And Bob is a guy that clearly, when it comes to the spring classics, especially the Derby, he's always a factor, and you just simply can't count him out. He seems to know how to get a horse ready for the first Saturday in May, and Medina Spirit is a horse that, if you toss him, you know, you might be doing it at your own peril.
Kurt Becker, ladies and gentlemen. Kurt, listen, safe travels. I know you're going to be busy the next few days, but I'll look forward to catching up with you next week when we get to Churchill Downs, and can't wait for our coverage. 5 o'clock Eastern next Saturday. Enjoy the NASCAR for now, and we'll talk soon.
Mike, it's always good to catch up, and everyone have a great Saturday, and looking forward to the Run for the Roses next week.
All right, Kurt Becker here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When I come back, it's time for your weekly Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift. You'll hear from jockey Chris DiCarlo talking about the new whip rules instituted in New Jersey, and then our industry star of the week. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Just because opening day has been temporarily put on hold doesn't mean there aren't plenty of great storylines to follow in the days leading up to the kickoff of the 2021 Thoroughbred Meet. In this week's report, trainer Michelle Love discusses her plate hopeful took a wrong turn, and trainer Nathan Squires talks about his young stars and veteran campaigners. Took a wrong turn is 30-1 in the Queen's Plate Winter Book, would be great value. Trainer Michelle Love was asked about her first impressions on the son of Super Speedy. She said, "He's very nice. The first time we worked him, the first quarter mile, that's when we thought he was a talented horse. He's always been very forward, and he's always had a big stride, which is what you're looking for in a racehorse." And when asked about heading down the plate trail, she said, "Honestly, we are training him for it. He had a few weeks off in December, and he was right back training on the farm. He was supposed to race in December when we got shut down, and he was going to go two turns. That was the next move with him, to go a mile and a 1/16 in a maiden race. That was the plan. He acts like he wants to go two turns in his works and in his stakes. He's always galloping out the winner. He's a big boy. We're training him for the plate. It's definitely exciting." In other news, trainer Nathan Squires was also asked to preview his Woodbine string for the upcoming meet. He said, "I have a good gelding, Gospel Way. He's back and he's training. He was with me in Ocala over the winter. He started back training and he's doing really well. I also have Lyrical Gangster. He's a big, gangly horse. I actually call him the class dunce. He was the type of horse where we had to teach him something 10 times before he actually learned. And what about the young stars in the Squires barn? Well, right now, he said I have 6 2-year-olds at the barn at Woodbine. I have a filly, Luz de la Luna. She is by Uncaptured out of Woven Lady. I trained Woven Lady her entire career. She wasn't the best horse, but she is one of my favorites because she would run on heart alone. She was a hard-knocking mare.
I also have a filly, Gilful. She is really, really nice. She could be any type of horse the way she trains. She is so professional. And that's your North of the Border report presented by Woodbine for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, each week we have been ranking the top contenders along the road to the Kentucky Derby. This segment is presented by spendthrift Bobby Newman, who you can catch every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon on our race day program presented by Twin Spires. Has the chance to update you on what's happening with all the contenders along the road to the Kentucky Derby. That road just about coming to an end, and then he shares his top five. Here it is, calling all three-year-olds, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Just 1 week till the Kentucky Derby, and several big decisions have been made in the past 7 days. As expected, connections for both Crowded Trade and Rombauer indeed decided to skip the Derby, allowing Dreamshake and Obesos to draw into the top 20. Then came a few, perhaps unexpected moves. First off, Brad Cox announced that Arkansas Derby runner-up Caddo River will head to Louisville for the Derby after being non-committal about a decision last week. However, trainer Bob Baffert announced that Rebel Champ Concert Tour would skip the race, opting to point for the Preakness Stakes on May 15th instead. He was coming off a lackluster third-place finish in the Arkansas Derby and supposedly needs more time to recuperate between races. This defection moves Get Her Number into the top 20, but wait, there's more. Both Dreamshake and Get Her Number are 50-50 for the Derby as of today. Trainer Pete Erton said that Dreamshake will be racing at Churchill Downs on May 1st, but right now he's not sure if it'll be in the Kentucky Derby or the Grade 2 Pat Day Mile. Additionally, trainer Peter Miller stated that Get Her Number's participation in the Derby depends on how he looks and comes out of a scheduled workout this morning at his home base of San Luis Rey Downs. What does this mean? Well, connections of Hozier and King Fury are certainly paying attention. Their numbers 21 and 22 on the Derby qualifying list, and the trainers for both have been outspoken about hoping they draw in. Finally, a big jockey decision by trainer John Sadler and the owners of Rockier World. Umberto Rispoli had ridden him in both of his stakes wins, including the Santa Anita Derby. But when Concert Tour defected, jockey Joel Rosario became available, and Sadler made the tough decision to make the change. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade Ones in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mitoli. His three consecutive Grade One victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first crop selling at the upcoming two-year-olds and training sales. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality, undefeated last year's two-year-old champ, the probable favorite in the Kentucky Derby. Number two, Known Agenda, impressive winner of the Florida Derby. He's improving at the right time. Number three, Highly Motivated, gave Essential Quality all he could handle in the Bluegrass, and he also continues to improve. Number four is Rock Your World. He's undefeated and the winner of the Santa Anita Derby. And number five, Mandaloon, disappointed in the Louisiana Derby, but capable of much better. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
It'll be here before we know it. All the questions will be answered next Saturday. And, of course, you'll hear all the action with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Visit horseracingradio.net for a complete Derby Week schedule, listing of affiliates, and all the SiriusXM channel information. And, of course, to listen worldwide, it's all there at horseracingradio.net. Coming up shortly, our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. You won't want to miss that one as I welcome Pete Rotundo from the Breeders' Cup. He will be calling it quits at the Breeders' Cup, moving on to a new endeavor after many, many years of service to our sport. Looking forward to that visit coming up In the Room with Sean Clancy, a one-on-one visit with Dylan Davis coming up at 10 o'clock Eastern, then a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker at 10:30, and trainer Graham Motion coming up at 10:40 Eastern to look back on Animal Kingdom's big derby win 10 years ago. And I'll also ask Graham to tell me, if he could train one horse in this year's derby, which one would he choose? Should be a fun conversation coming up at 10:40 Eastern time. Earlier this week, the New Jersey Racing Commission, who, by the way, had already issued this last year, that they would make changes to the whip rules. Jockeys will not be allowed to use their whip racing in New Jersey unless it is needed for safety reasons. The Jockeys Guild took issue with this in court, and it was announced earlier this week that their request for a stay had been turned down. The Guild will still appeal that decision, but that appeal is not expected to be heard before the opening of Monmouth Meet, which is May 28th. Chris DiCarlo joined Bobby Newman and special guest co-host trainer Chuck Simon on our race day show this past week, and here's what he had to say from the jockey's perspective.
You've been pretty outspoken, just as many jockeys have, about this new whip rule that has been instituted in New Jersey or by the New Jersey Racing Commission and what will go into effect with this upcoming meet at Monmouth Park. It's a rule that I'd love for you to explain to everybody. It's something that the riders are adamant about and you know, so serious about one way or the other, that guys like Joe Bravo, Antonio Gallardo, Daniel Centeno have flat out said, we will not ride at Monmouth this summer because of this rule. So what exactly is going on, and why do the jockeys dislike it so much?
Well, basically, you're not allowed to hit the horse anymore. It's only for safety purposes. There's a lot of instances in races where you may not see a horse do anything or may think he's going to put anybody in danger, but that's something that you can't see, but we can feel as jockeys. And, you know, it's going to be a total judgment call by the stewards on whether they think that it is a safety for safety or if we're encouraging the horse.
And when you say it's a judgment call by the stewards, this is something where they can levy fines and suspensions basically just on their opinion of how the whip will be used?
Yes.
So give me an example.
Okay, say I'm in fourth or fifth, okay, and my horse, I feel my horse is getting out or something, and I reach down and I hit him. All of a sudden, the horse takes off. He wins the race, okay? The guy that finished second didn't hit his horse, okay? So now I can be disqualified because I hit my horse, which was a necessity because it was a safety reason, but I'm going to get in trouble for it, disqualified, days, and a fine because I'm doing what I think is right for me and my safety and the safety for the other riders. You know, it's just a crazy rule. I don't understand why, A, they never asked us our opinion. We're the ones on the horses. You know, I don't think racing has done a lot since Eight Bells as far as whips and making them safer and number of strikes are allowed. You know, and I think everything was working along fine. You know, now we have a plethora of breakdowns that happened in California a few years ago, you know, whether it be from track or unsound horses. But all of a sudden, everything gets thrown onto the jockeys that the whips are the reason why these horses are breaking down, which is completely ludicrous.
Yeah, and you're not the only one who thinks that way. There are big-name riders who have said something. Bring Chuck Simon in now. Chuck, you were mentioning to me there are guys like John Velasquez and Javier Castellano who have told their agents not to book them on mounts even for big races at Monmouth.
Yeah, both of them have announced on Twitter that they're going to instruct their agents not to take, you know, they're only riding at Monmouth in those big money races anyways, so that would be actually a huge stance. And Chris and I talked about this issue about 6 months ago back on my podcast, and It was one of the most downloaded podcasts that I did, and this was a while ago. And I think one of the biggest issues I have with the entire episode is that the New Jersey Racing Commission is supposed to have 9 members. It currently has 4. And they never brought the jockeys in. They never brought the guild in. They never brought anyone in. And you have 4 people, and these are politically appointed positions. Why they don't have a full board, I have no idea. But I don't even know how you can call it a quorum if you have 4 of 9. You don't even have a majority to vote on this. And I just think
I think their scapegoat is that it was ludicrous. COVID, and like with all things that's happening, they weren't able to hire get a group together.
Yeah, there was much more to that that interview, but in the interest of time, go ahead and cut it off there. But you get the point. It's a safety issue, and this decision not to be able to use the whip unless it's absolutely necessary from a safety perspective. Who makes that decision? You heard Chris DiCarlo say it's going to be at the discretion of the stewards to make that call and to levy a fine or days or whatever it might be. And it's just insane, because so many times the jockeys are reacting to the horse, and the whip is not to hurt the horse. I agree with whip rules. We don't want to abuse the horse at all. You have to have standards as to how many times the horse can be struck and all those types of things. But to say that you can't use it at all as a corrective measure to help yourself for the safety of the equine, for the safety of the jockeys, is absolutely insane. And you heard Chuck talk about the fact that we're only 4 people making this decision. It's supposed to be 9. There was only 4 people that were appointed that made this decision. The Jockeys Guild can't even tell you who those 4 people are. They didn't even have a seat at the table in this discussion. Yet it's a decision on the part of the New Jersey Racing Commission that is going to affect the safety of those riders every time they get a leg up. And let's face it, it's dangerous enough as it is. Now you take that corrective implement out of their hands. It's just absolute insanity. And I can see why many of the riders have decided, forget it. If this is the way it's going to be, we'll go ride somewhere else. You're going to hear more about this story as we make our way toward Monmouth. It's going to get bad. So many jockeys are going to say, forget it. And I can't blame them. It's bad for the horse. It is bad for the humans. And it's irresponsible on the part of the New Jersey Racing Commission. Completely irresponsible. All right, when I come back, it's time for your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. Pete Rotundo joins me. This is going to be fun. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Championship racing returns to legendary Pimlico Racecourse starting Thursday, April 22nd. The Spring Stakes Spectacular, a collection of 7 stakes worth $750,000 in purses, originally scheduled for Laurel Park, will be run in Baltimore on Saturday, April 24th. Look for an exciting day of racing led by the $125,000 Federico Tessio and the $125,000 Weber City Miss. Also scheduled are the first 3 stakes of Maryland's turf season. Limited track admissions, or catch all the action live via live stream at Pimlico.com. Post time, 12:40 p.m.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the field turns for home. Here comes the Equiner.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was, of course, Tom Durkin with one of the more legendary, iconic calls in the history of thoroughbred racing. Tis Now wins it for America. The 2001 running of the Breeders' Cup Classic in New York. And Pete Rotundo was with Breeders' Cup that year. It was his very first year with Breeders' Cup after NTRA and Breeders' Cup merged together. What a way to begin a career that is going to come to an end this year. He'll go on to other things, more than likely in racing. But considering everything that Pete Rotundo has done for this sport, working behind the scenes at Breeders' Cup over the years, I could think of nobody better to honor as our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, than Pete Rotundo. And he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pete, welcome, my friend.
Hey, Mike. Thank you. Great intro. I appreciate it.
Well, listen, you have done a lot to help me personally. We started with the Breeders' Cup in 2007 at Monmouth Park. That was the first year. Nobody knew who on earth we were, what we were doing, what Horse Racing Radio Network was going to become. And you stepped up along with Jim Gluckson and all the other folks at Breeders' Cup and said, hey, we'll help you. We will do whatever you need. And it has been a wonderful partnership, and I'm sad to see you go.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, no, I know. I can't believe it's been, that was 07. Yeah, I remember those early days. So a lot of drama getting everything off the ground, but I'm glad. Look at this, 14 years later, right? And you're still rolling along.
So
this is, and now you're the home of the Triple Crown for many years. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been a great run. For me, listen, 20 years, I can't believe it's been 20 years, right? Like 2001 doesn't feel like that long ago, but then suddenly it is, right? And then so it's been fantastic. I can't, you know, literally no regrets, no complaints. It's been a wild run.
That 2001 running of the Breeders' Cup Classic meant so much to so many people because of what had just happened with 9/11, Tis Now winning it for America in a dramatic stretch battle. When you think back on these 20 years, Pete, what are some of the moments that are always going to stand out to you personally?
Well, the Breeders' Cups themselves, right? It's such a blur, those weekends. You know, there's so much going on, right? So from throwing the events during the week, and then, of course, the Breeders' Cups themselves. And, you know, my main gig when it, you know, for many, many years was the television, right? So I'd be working with ESPN or NBC. So I'd be in the trucks with them trying to help plan the shows, making sure the sponsors are taken care of. And then as we grew and we decided, you know, we tried more and more, became more of an entertainment event as well, you know, with on-track performances. And there's just been some great, if you really look back, you know, I think about, you know, from the horse racing point of view, you know, the Zenyatta in 09 was just, I mean, it's like it was unbelievable when she won at Santa Anita. I mean, no pun intended, right? It was, you know, one of those moments that I was so nervous, you know, and just wanted it to go right. And you remember Quality Road acting up before the race, and you're like, "Are you kidding me? Like, is this is really going to happen?" But then, how she won. Now that was, you know, really a highlight. And of course, American Pharoah in 15 was just so, again, nerve wracking. You know, all that build up, and then it finally, you know, it happens, as you know. There's always that buildup, and then suddenly it's like, oh, a lot of disappointment, right? When it comes to these, sometimes when you're trying to finish it out, that was great. And like some of these entertainment stuff, you know, Tony Bennett, we had sing "The Best Is Yet to Come" that was part of our brand campaign, because he actually wrote the song, right? And he was, you know, obviously he was alive and kicking, so we brought him in just to hang out with Tony Bennett for an hour, you know, back in the, you know, the jocks room, basically, at Santa Anita, getting him ready for his performance. It was just so cool. I mean, you know, you're having a conversation with him just as he gets ready to sing at the Breeders' Cup, which was super cool.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was going to be my next question. I was going to ask you about some of the celebrities and the humans that really touched you over the years, that when you think back on these 20 years, you're going to say, wow, that was a moment. Tony Bennett's one. Were there other moments like that, Pete, where you got to meet people and spend some time with people that you probably never would have been able to if you weren't working with Breeders' Cup?
Yeah, I mean, you know, even from, like, you know, more current people like Elizabeth Banks, who, you know, she's obviously an actress, but really a producer now and director, and she legitimately loves the game. She knows how to bet. You know, we had a fun story. It was at Del Mar. The last summer at Del Mar, she came down for the day, and she made a bunch of bets, and I was like, okay, well, now we got to go do an interview, you know, for NBC. It's like, you know, coming on the air in prime time. And she was sort of ready to get in the golf cart. And she's like, oh, no. She's like, I lost my tickets. I go, where are they? She's like, I think I dropped them in the bathroom. And I'm like, well, she's like, I'm going back. So she literally, I'm like, we're running out of time. She runs back to the ladies' room in the suite there or whatever, finds them on the floor of the bathroom and takes them with her. And she's like, I got them, right? And then I zipped her right to the NBC interview. So you're talking like, you know, just stuff like that. It's just like minor, whatever, but it's just so cool. Like, she really cared about her bets there. But, you know, between, you know, folks like that, we've had...
That's a story every horse player can relate to, right? That's a story every horse player can relate to. Running back to find your tickets on the bathroom floor.
Exactly. Before you're going live on NBC.
Yeah.
So we've had some great names through the years. You know, Bo Derek has been the coolest one of them all. She's like, you know, really like a friend now of the family. And she's always out there to help whoever, whenever, whatever charity we're trying to promote or anytime we needed her for anything through the years, she's always been there. So, you know, there's a lot of names, but, you know, it's been quite a run.
What are you going to miss most about your time at Breeders' Cup?
Well, I mean, the people I work with, right? I mean, you know, if you look back, I've worked with, there's some, like, let's say Dora Delgado, right? I mean, she's been there since the very beginning. But so since I joined Breeders' Cup, she's been there. You know, Peggy Godofka, who you know, she's been there forever. And then since I've been there, Heather Higgins and Stephanie Palmieri, Amy Lasky, my boy Justin McDonald. I mean, we're talking about 15 to 20 years, Jimmy G, of course, you know, of working together. That's like unheard of, right? Like it feels like in this new world we're living in. So, I mean, yeah, I'm going to miss just every day. You know, we're like family. So it's like, it's definitely bittersweet.
Yeah, it is a family. And as I mentioned earlier, since 2007, we are very proud to be able to say we're part of that Breeders' Cup family here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And everybody, yourself included, made us feel that way from the very beginning. And it's a special place to work. It's a special organization. And Pete Rotundo is going to be missed. He is our industry star of the week. He'll be leaving Breeders' Cup, as I told you earlier, after 20 years with the organization. Pete, I know that you'll probably try to find some way to stay involved in horse racing if you can. You love the sport. You love to bet. You love to handicap. And that leads me into the next question. 1 week away from the Run for the Roses, who do you have your eye on?
I know. Suddenly, right? I feel like, you know, when I haven't been traveling too much, right, as you might imagine. Just had, you know, a baby, and so we've been spending a lot of time home. But then it's like when you're not on the road and you're not moving along, the time just clicks along, really, right? And then suddenly, it's a week before the Derby. So, I mean, listen, Essential Quality, I've been on since the beginning, right? I liked him in the Breeders' Maturity. I liked him in the Juvenile. And, obviously I'm not betting him in the Southwest or the Bluegrass, but I'm rooting for him when he won. So it's like I haven't been on a two-year-old champ in so long that it feels a little bit tough to go off of him now. I mean, even though he'll be, quote, the favorite, but it's 7-2. 5-2. I mean, that's not too bad. I think there's going to be a ton of speed in here, right? I mean, I think everybody's been saying that. Rock Your World, and obviously they're going to send Cadu River. You know, as a bomb, you know, you're trying to find that long shot to sneak in there, you know, second, third, fourth. What do you think about this Hidden Stash? I mean, the speed figures don't hold up. But again, I at a mile and a quarter, I don't get too caught up in that because it's distance, you know, the longest they've ever been, and you really just don't know. Horses have never had a pace to run into. Obviously, going to get it this time around, and looks a little, gives me that little country house vibe. Although country house is a little faster in his numbers back in the day, but as a bomb, you know, get in the mix. But again, for me, when I do my real homework, you know, I got to wait till they draw and see it and, you know, sort of map it out that way. But, I think I'm going to stay loyal with essential quality, but, I'm going to look for a hidden stash to maybe sneak in there for me.
I put a poll question out there this morning, which so many people are taking time to vote. What's your favorite way to bet the Kentucky Derby? And I gave some choices, Pete. Win, place, show, exacta, trifecta, super, Oaks Derby double, or other, and people have specified other ways they like to do it. But how about for you, your favorite way to bet the Kentucky Derby?
Well, what I do is every year I put out my $100 betting strategy, right? So that's my friends and whoever normally, you know, who might just bet once or twice a year or whatever, just something to do. And usually it's $100, right? You figure if it's the Derby, you can bet $100, if you need some action, especially nowadays where everybody's betting on literally everything. Win, place, pick your top horse or your long shot. And then I like to do an exacta box. I do like a tri-part wheel, right? So I'll, you know, put my top three or four in the first and second hole and try to spread in the third. And that's it. So basically, win, place, exacta, and then the tri-part wheel to try to go for the score. And as you might remember, 2 years ago, and I'm still living off of it, so because I'm looking all over my house here. I got these country house photos everywhere. You know, my $100 betting strategy turned into $15,000 for my friends. So they, you know, and I got Stewie, I got my dog as a tip, and Shona got a nice rock on her finger. So that $100 strategy has been paying off for me.
Well, listen, if there's ever a year for you to make a big score on the Kentucky Derby, it's probably this year. It was about 2 months ago that you welcomed the new addition to your family, your little girl Rosie, who is adorable, by the way. Named her Rosie, I would think that's an omen. You have to make a score on the Derby this year, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was a perfect name, you know, for so many reasons. But obviously, with the horse, obviously, you run for the roses. And you know, and it's funny, today, I'll give you one more thing. You know, I'm big into Guns N' Roses, right? And yeah. Years ago, I got into a horse named Axel Rosie, was the name of the horse. She never made it to the races, but she had a baby named Mr. Brownstone, which, of course, as you know, Guns N' Roses hit, is running today at Santa Anita. So it's all coming full circle.
Load up on Mr. Brownstone later today, and we'll see if we can't make a score. Yeah, no. Guns N' Roses, welcome to the jungle, baby.
That's it. Well, exactly, especially here. But, yeah, anyway, but I really appreciate you you know, making some time for me today, and it's been, you know, it's been a great run. And listen, I'm not really going anywhere. I'm taking a break. I'm going to hang out with the baby a little bit and Shona, and then you'll see me soon enough.
Yeah, sweet child of mine, Rosie.
That's right.
Another playoff of Gene R. See what I did there? See? Pete Rotundo
here on
the horse.
It all ties in, all of it. Yeah.
Pete Rotundo on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Pete, you have been wonderful to work with. I will miss you at Breeders' Cup. I know so many people will, but we'll look forward to seeing the next chapter of Pete Rotundo coming up shortly, and really appreciate you taking the visit here this morning and being this week's Industry Star of the Week. Well deserved.
All right. Thanks, Mike, and good luck this week, and be tuning in on next Saturday for listening to you guys.
All right. Thanks, brother. Pete Rotundo, that Industry Star of the Week segment brought to you by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. Got a text from Stuart this morning before the show. He is fired up about this sport. He's fired up about the OBS sale that just took place. And you know, with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignments at all of the upcoming major sales. I'm back to get you set for the third hour of the program right after this. It's the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. They're off in the Belmont Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear. The vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's GetVaccineAnswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
The Department of Veterans Affairs is so innovative, it not only improves the lives of veterans, it transforms the lives of healthcare professionals who serve them with access to the latest technologies and remarkable benefits. Transform your future at vacareers.va.gov.
HRRN is your home for over 20 hours of Derby Week coverage, April 27th through May 1st. Leading up to our exclusive coverage of the 147th Run for the Roses, we'll bring you live coverage from Churchill Downs, including our Derby Countdown shows, presented by Hillendale Farms, our exclusive coverage of Kentucky Oaks 147, all the Kentucky Derby undercard races, and more. Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of shows or to listen live.
Hey, this is Mike Penna from Horse Racing Radio Network. Join us on Saturday, May 1st for exclusive radio coverage of the 147th Kentucky Derby. We'll bring you wire-to-wire coverage of the Run for the Roses live from Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky, presented by Twin Spires. It's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, the Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 1st, beginning at 5 p.m. right here on Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, over the past couple of months, I've been telling you about the new Outdoors Superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore, which is in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. It is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and the Elite Outdoor Superstore has everything that you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more, whatever it might be. They even have two indoor archery ranges and sell several different types of bows. So what you want to do is stop in, you want to see them, and you want to tell them that I told you to stop in because, as you know, I love the outdoors. I love to be out there hunting and fishing and doing all those types of things. So stop in, see Tevis, see the great team at the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. Again, 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, and let them know that the Baron sent you in and told them that you had to get ready for the season there. Clothing, too, by the way. Boots, all kinds of different hunting clothing. It's fantastic down there in Nicholasville. All right, coming up in the third hour of the program, we'll be in the room with Sean Clancy as he sits down with Dylan Davis. Really looking forward to that visit. You'll hear from Kurt Becker as well, his stroll through racing history coming up, and Graham Motion coming up at 10:40 to look back on Animal Kingdom and talk about this year's field as well. I'm going to ask him if he could train one horse in the field, which one would he choose? Should be a lot of fun. At 10:40. Gives me a second here. We have about a minute or so left before we have to get to that third hour. But if your local station will be leaving us, all you have to do is continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219 XM 201. You can also do it in the Louisville market, ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or your tablet. And by the way, Bluetooth is in your car now. You can just Bluetooth us through our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can always listen every time we're on the air. live from Churchill Downs beginning on Tuesday. This coming Tuesday, the first of three Derby Countdown shows presented by Hillandale Farms. Those come your way 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Sirius 216 XM 202. Don't forget, a different Sirius XM channel. That information's on our website at horseracingradio.net, and you can listen there as well. Next Friday, the Kentucky Oaks, 3 to 6 Eastern on this channel, Sirius 219 XM 201. And then, of course, all the Derby Day coverage. This show live from Churchill, 8 to 11 next Saturday morning. Undercard at 3, and the big broadcast, the Derby at 5. That's all coming up next week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Hour 3 kicks off next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Clairiere still has five lengths to find and a 16th to do so as Super Sensational is switched out. Lil Tootsie is fourth, but close to home, it's Travel Column. Travel Column to win the Fairgrounds Oaks handily.
Past the Champagne, a two-length lead. She leads it by a length and a half. By a length, Malathat still trying. Past the Champagne, Malathat running on from the outside at the line. Malathat gets up to win it for Shadwell Stable and Joel Rosario in the Central Bank Ashland.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Down to the wire, it's Hidden Stash and Rafael Bayerano along the rail. Digging back, Gamely is Helium. Looks like we're down to two. Helium repels the challenge. It's Helium in a huge effort. Turns away the challenge of Hidden Stash.
And here's Bourbonic, who was last, making a late run out in the middle of the track. It is Dynamic One and Bourbonic. Dynamic One and Bourbonic. A photo finish. Bourbonic got there under Kendrick Carmouche. Kendrick Carmouche thinks he got there. And it's a major upset in this 2021 Wood Memorial.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour 3 rolling on. Very busy morning, as always, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Just walk through the schedule for next week, our Derby Week programming. Again, if you missed that, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check it all out. Poll question today: how do you like to bet the Kentucky Derby? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and of course you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Looks like HRN Nation is siding with me on this one. Exacta, trifecta, superfecta. The most popular way to bet the Derby. Keep those votes coming in all the way through the third hour of the program. I'm a trifecta guy. I love to play the every once in a while I'll play a super, but I really like to put my efforts into trying to hit a good try and throwing some bombs into the third spot and hoping that some horse at 30 or 40 or 50 to 1 sneaks in for the third spot. Because I always look at it as, if I can get the first two, if I can pick the Exacta and I can throw multiple horses in the third spot, anybody can be third, especially in a 20-horse field, especially when horses are going a mile and a quarter for the first time. All those questions have to be answered, and it seems like you always get one horse, second, third, that makes a pretty good trifecta. So that's just the way I like to play it. It looks like most of the people in HRN Nation feel the same way. Exacta, tries, and supers leading the way. Kevin Kirstein kicked off the show with me at 8:15 Eastern. If you missed it, you can head back and check out the podcast of the entire show at horseracingradio.net after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. Kevin was talking about all the horses that were on the track yesterday and the horses that made it out onto the track this morning. Keep in mind, because the forecast was not good, they were expecting rain here in central Kentucky in the morning and then throughout much of the day today. Many trainers moved their works to yesterday morning, including trainer Todd Pletcher. One trainer that didn't was Brad Cox. He sent out Champion Essential Quality this morning, early in the morning, 5:30 or so this morning, under the lights at Churchill. Essential Quality beat the rain, worked on a dry track, 1:02 for the 5 furlongs for Essential Quality. Good work for him. Mandaloon, the other Brad Cox trainee, one of the other ones, worked outside of a horse named Joe Frazier, 5 furlongs in 1 minute flat. So good work for Mandaloon. Many people thinking he's a bit of a buzz horse and maybe the live long shot, myself included. Superstock, 5 furlongs, 101.1 for Steve Asmussen. Highly motivated. Worked 5 furlongs, 1:04 this morning. And then other Oaks horses were out there, including Crazy Beautiful, who went 4 furlongs and 49.1. King Fury, who just drew into the Kentucky Derby yesterday after a couple of defections, worked under Brian Hernandez in 5 furlongs in 1:01. So good workouts there this morning at Churchill Downs. Everybody just trying to make it through this final hurdle before they turn their attention to the Run for the Roses. And one thing Kevin said, I asked him about Brad Cox. He'll be saddling his first Derby starters, plural, this year, including the Derby favorite. I said, how's he holding up? He said, you know, he's cool as a cucumber. He did kind of take a deep breath this morning after his horses came off the track, as if to say, okay, we made it through. Let's make sure everything's okay from here on out, and we'll just keep him happy up until the first Saturday of May, which, by the way, 7 days, 8 hours, 39 minutes, and 46 seconds away from that Run for the Roses. All right, the third hour of the show kicks off, as it does every single Saturday, with In the Room with Sean Clancy. And this week, the former champion steeplechase rider sits down for a unique one-on-one visit with jockey Dylan Davis.
And he did it again! Dylan Davis! Dylan Davis! It's a sensational 6-win day for Dylan Davis.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Dylan Davis. The New York native has registered 818 wins for over $41 million in a career that began in 2012. The son of jockey Robbie Davis, a winner of 3,382 races in a storied career, Davis, like his dad, has staked his corner in the tough New York jocks room, winning over 100 races in each of the past three seasons. Welcome to the show, Dylan.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for having me.
You were rolling this year, 35 wins through March 20th before breaking your collarbone in a spill at Aqueduct. I mean, you had won two on the day, including the Cicada. How are you feeling now?
I'm doing better. Just really anxious to get back.
Yeah, what's this part like? I mean, what's it like to get injured physically? I know you're hurting, but then sometimes the mental part can be worse.
Yeah, this is actually my first real injury that I've had. I've had some bruised bones and dislocated my shoulder once, but nothing that's really set me out of racing this long. You know, I really can't do much right now, but I'm just really anxious to get back riding. It's just, I really miss sitting on top of a horse.
Yeah, mentally, what's it like to go from riding? I mean, I think you rode 9 that day, and then all of a sudden you're solitary sitting in the house. What's that like?
It's not good, because I've been doing it every day since, like you said, since 2012. I've been at it, going full force and nonstop. Definitely very weird for me. Just can't do much. I got a lot of energy and I can't get it out. So I'm just happy that I'm home with my kids. I didn't really get too much time to spend with them, and now I do, even though I'm broken and I can't do much with them. But just being with them is very nice, and my family. So just going on some walks and just watching them have some fun and stuff.
Yeah, that's nice. You got to enjoy those moments. And what's the prognosis? When will you be able to get back on horses?
I will be looking maybe like in the middle of May, or maybe a little bit before that. I should be ready to go.
We're looking forward to seeing you come back. Take us through that fall. I mean, there was two other guys, Nick Juarez and Nori Vargas. What was that like, you guys? I mean, in the moment, you're hurt, but those guys are there right around you. What's that like? I mean, as a guy that, I mean, you're competitors, but you're also comrades. What's that like looking around and seeing those guys hurt next to you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember every part of it. I'm just saving ground. I'm in the two path, and I'm tucked in right behind George Vargas Jr. And all of a sudden, I saw his horse kind of like lose a little action. So I wasn't really sure what was happening. Maybe he tried to jump or tripped or something. And I said, well, that's not right. So the next jump that horse took, the whole body started lowering. And what ended up happening is the horse ended up having a heart attack during the race, unfortunately.
Wow.
And I did see the horse actually lower with him, like about a foot. And I said, well, now there's something wrong going. And the horse started lowering a little more, and I said, okay, this is no good. I was right behind him, and maybe I gave myself a little half a length. So I was maybe a half a length off of his heels, pretty close to him anyways. And we entered that turn, and the horse started doing that and dropped. And I was able to react very quickly. I was paying attention, very sharp. I was able to get out of the way, and I was clear. But his horse ended up doing a full somersault. And by that, we were in the turn. The horse's legs pretty much tripped up my filly's legs and causing my filly to go down, and me too. And I landed straight on my shoulder, my left shoulder. And at that point, I was laying down, and I knew something was wrong right away. I ended up being able to sit right up, thought that the wind was knocked out of me. It was really hard for me to breathe. And right away, my whole shoulder was burning. And I said, something's wrong. I just don't want to move. I'm not moving. I could hear George Vargas behind me moaning, and I heard Nick Juarez was up and okay. He was checking me. It was very nice of him to check me and check Georgie. Just had the outriders coming to us, medical team, asking us if we're okay, and I knew something right away was wrong with my shoulder, and the collarbone was broken.
Yeah, I've broken plenty of bones, and people who haven't broken bones, they say, how do you know it was broken? And I'm like, well, believe me, when you break something, you know it's broken. Is that kind of how it felt, right?
Yeah, this is my first break ever in my life. I'm very, actually,
wow,
I'm very
gonna,
lucky
I'm gonna touch
to
wood
get this
here.
Far.
I'm touching wood on yeah, for you for that.
This sport, I'm very lucky to get this far, and I know I'm very lucky. I just knew right away. It was burning. It was just on fire, and I've actually had one of the medical team ask me to move it, and I said, no, I already know I can't move it, and I didn't even try to move it, and I knew I couldn't move it. And right then and there, like you said, you just know it was broken.
Take us back to the beginning. Your dad was a jockey. What was that like for a kid? I mean, were you in all of his career and always interested in it? I mean, were you always kind of wanted to be a jockey? What was that like for you?
No, never really had interest in being a jockey. I was just enjoying being a kid. When dad retired, I was about 8 years old. I just remember just running around and playing on the track, and I never really had a lot of focus on the actual racing, just being a kid pretty much.
When did that desire start? When did you, do you remember a moment when you think, wow, I really want to do this? Was that just growing up on the farm in Saratoga, or what was that like?
Yeah, I was messing around with motocross, dirt bikes, and I was racing locally upstate Saratoga, and there was a time where I outgrew the age group that I was in, which was like 13 to 15 years old, with my size bike that I had. And I told Dad, I said, I want to still compete. I need a bigger bike to compete. And he says, I was 16, so I just got out of that group. And he says, no. He says, I don't want you to get a bigger bike. I said, why? Why can't I get a bigger bike? I want to keep racing. I love this. I love doing it. He's like, well, that means you go faster, you do bigger jumps, and you're going to get hurt. He's like, no. He says, find something else to do. And at that point, I was in my junior year of high school, and I'm like, I don't know what I want to do. I was doing wrestling in the winter time, and I needed a summer thing to do. And I just thinking about it, I'm like, I'm going to have to start getting on some horses. I was born with this. I have Dad right here. He can help me out. And I was pretty much born to do it anyways. I loved horses. I loved horses my whole life. I just never really got interacted with them until later on, around 15 years old. And I was just messing around with the pony and jogging. Luckily, Dad was training himself, so I was able to get one-on-one, like, coaching from the beginning.
Wow, he's a great coach. And did he ever try to talk you out of it, or was he always 100% supportive of you being a jockey?
It's funny that you say that, because he was 100% behind me, but when one of my first siblings started riding Jackie, he was not for it at all. He just knew, because he knows about all the dangerous, you know, spills or what you have to go through to become a jockey. And he was 100% behind me, and even to this day, he's still critiquing my rides, which is great. I love the support to get better, but right from the beginning, he was all for it. He never wanted to push me away from the sport.
Wow. And how often do you hear you look just like your dad on the horse? I know that was the first thing that struck me. You were galloping horses, I think, for Wesley Ward at Saratoga, and I actually saw you cross the road, and I looked, and I was like, that's Robbie Davis. I mean, that's a young Robbie Davis.
Oh, yeah. I can't count how many times that's happened. I never had the chance to watch him, like, race or remember, like, how his style was when I was that young. It's hard for me to remember, so I have to go off of, like, race replays or YouTube and watch, like, his big wins and all that stuff. But I've never really actually tried to mold myself the way he's ridden. It's just natural. It's just because of the genetics or whatever, the way I look like how he does on the horse.
Yeah, and I mean a young Robbie Davis, not the I'm not picking on him, but not the Robbie Davis in those big hiking boots he gallops in now. not that Robbie Davis. I can say that because I'm friends with your dad, but I mean the young Robbie Davis.
Really, to become a country man up there once he retired, he's really taken full to Saratoga Springs on him. He loves it up there.
I love it. So who do you watch, Dylan? I mean, who are your mentors, your idols growing up or even now, guys that you try to emulate?
Right now, I've been watching a lot of Joel Rosario. He's just an impeccable rider. I really get a lot from him. He's got a lot of timing, and I don't know why he's so far back in the races, but it's just because he has so much horse, and I see how once the races really develop, just an unreal rider, very strong finisher down the lane, and I just try to mimic him myself.
Yeah, I always say that there's jockeys who ride that they ride like they were the first to know they were going to win the race, and then there's riders who ride like they were the last one to know they were going to win a race, and Rosario is definitely in the former. The way he confidently rides, the way he waits, he's empathetic to the horse. They never get, you know, he never overdoes it. Like, no matter how hard a race, it's probably just a little bit easier with him because of the style he rides. And it's something that I think a lot of young riders could pick up from when you watch him.
Of course, yeah. You just have a lot. I need a lot more horse to work with to be real confident to come from out of the clouds like he does. But when I do, though, it would definitely make it a lot easier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the bottom line is what you're riding. I mean, when you're getting on those, I mean, it's confidence builds confidence. When you're riding good horses, you start, that confidence grows. I mean, I'm sure you can feel that way when you're rolling. You start just making better decisions and ride more confidently. Then it's more instinct, right? I mean, that's kind of what you're going for.
For sure. Once you get on a roll and start winning races, you get a lot more, you know, confidence and I can do this attitude. And you always have to have that. But it just even more overlaps when you keep winning races daily or weekly, and even stake races. You just feel like, okay, I got a good feeling for this. And then overall, just year after year, you get a lot of good feel about what you're sitting on and when to move and how the scenarios show up and what you have to do. And you just get, it's just over a period of time riding and just all that confidence is just really takes time.
And people you talk to, I mean, guys like Richard Migliori and people like that, they must help you with that and that kind of approach. Guys that have done it before, your dad, and people who can be mentors for you.
Of course. I'm very lucky to have my father just being at top level racing that he's been competing in New York, and also Richard Migliori also. These two guys combined, almost 8,000 winners. To have those two guys behind my back in my corners is really special. And I definitely listen to them. I have to listen to them, and they didn't win all those races for nothing.
Are they ever hard on you? I mean, do they ever give you grief or give you, I mean, do they ever pull you up and say, hey, that wasn't good enough, or you're doing this wrong, or do they kind of, you know, hammer on you a little or not really?
Not my dad too much. Maybe it's because it's a father-son relationship, so he doesn't want to be that hard on me, but I definitely get that from Richie. He's really, really hard on me. And sometimes I don't like it, but when I take a second and sit back for a second, he wants me to do good. So I have to take that criticism and turn it around and use it. And once I use it, I know he wants me to do good. I have to listen to him. Even if he tells me I screw up a ride and I don't like it, I have to keep moving forward and learn from that, whatever mistake I make, and remember and don't make it again.
Right. What's the biggest thing that he tells you or gets on you about?
Positioning for sure. He's really hard on me about, you know, coming out of the gate in that first eighth or quarter of a mile, about, you know, how long to let him run out or where to be. And then the second most was saving ground and being patient. Know who you're around with. Make sure you do your homework. And once you know what horses you're with, you get that confidence that, okay, that horse in front of me is not going to be up there at the eighth pole, so I can't be behind him for much longer. You have to find something else. And doing that handicapping give you more confidence in the race.
Right, exactly. And I'd say Mig was, that was really one of his specialties, was to break and get a position. He would get there. He rode for guys like Mike Hushin that wanted horses close, but he was very good at that. Kind of get a position. They always say get a position while going forward, right? I mean, that's
exactly
the art of being a jockey, right? You don't want to get that position while taking back, because that's actually not a position. You want to take that position going forward. That's something that's crucial.
That's the number one thing that he's instilled into me is, and it's not easy, as like we're talking about. It's definitely not easy to, you know, say and do it. It's definitely tougher than you think.
Don't feel bad, because he used to give me the same lecture, and I was going two miles. He said, "You got to get in the race, get that position, get inside." All right, that's it, man. I got to a point where when I was riding well, I said, okay, when in doubt, be third on the inside. You know, if your horse isn't a front runner and he's not a stone cold closer and the pace is average for the race, right, you just try to be second, third on the inside. It seemed like that's where I won a lot of races.
Yep.
And who's the toughest jockey to get past? When you're turning for home, you think, oh, God, it's X, Y, or Z here next to me. Who's tough?
Well, I would say Joel, because he's one of my idols anyways, but he always comes from the clouds.
Right,
so,
sure.
So if you see him coming, or he's up, if he's on the lead sometimes, and if he's on the lead and he's sitting chilly, he's one tough man to pass. But I could say, if you're saying a guy that's on the lead and he's hard to pass, it would be like a Luis Saez for me, or Johnny Velasquez. When they're up front, they always seem to find more. I feel like Luis Saez is more one of the toughest guys to pass if he's on the lead. He just always, they don't know what he does. He does a lot of hand riding or throwing the reins action, but those horses really pick that bit up, and he really finds that little extra all the time. He's just really tough to pass.
Yeah, he's strong. He's like a little ball of muscle, right? He's really got to get those horses running or something.
He has that, he's a short stature like me. But he has that, like, center of gravity where he's right with them, and he's really pushing them forward without really getting in their way. He's more of a hand guy than, like a European side where he's rocking.
Yeah.
He's more of a hand-style rider, and he's just really tough.
Right. And Johnny's got to be difficult because he's such a good judge of pace, right? I mean, if when you get to him, he hasn't misjudged the pace. There's other guys that are easy to pass because they might have been doing more than they should have the whole way, but Johnny rarely does that.
Yeah, Johnny is a very good rider. I mean, everyone could say that. But he really manages his horses very well. Like Richie says, he gets very good position going forward. And then after that, he's a very good manager between that middle race and knowing when to move or knowing when to wait for a horse to come up to him and he'll use his horse again. He's a very well manager of the horse and saving the horse's energy.
No doubt. And is there a race in your career you want back? I mean, one that you just think, oh, God, I'd like to ride that one again.
Yeah, I was just recently for Clement in the Matty May Stakes. I was riding a filly for him, and I was on the lead, and the rail wasn't that good that day, I wouldn't think, but some people say otherwise. But I did come off the rail just a pass. I mean, maybe two. And Eric Cancel ended up trying to slip up on the inside. And I heard him, and I was definitely made it tight on him. But if I did any more, my number would have probably came down. So I did have to hold my line after that because he was already a quarter of the way in there at the eighth pole. And I just say that if I just stayed on the rail, it would have never came to that point, and I would have probably won that race. The most recent race, for sure.
Sure, yeah. And the best one. What's the best ride you've ever given a horse?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. First stake winner, or winning from my father. But I have to go to my favorite horse of all time right now is my Pat on the Back New York Bred, because when I won a lot of New York Bred races with him throughout his career. But he won an open, the Kelso Handicap Grade 2. He stepped up to open class and he won that race. And I was just very happy to win with him, and he's done open company before, but you know, this was more towards his later career. He won the Kelso, and I was just so happy to win with him. We built a like special bond together, and since the beginning, I've ridden him as a two-year-old in his whole career. I maybe had sat off of him maybe like three or four times because he shipped out of town or whichever. Kenny McBeat took him somewhere else, but for the Kentucky Derby Trail. But other than that, I pretty much ridden him his whole career, and I just feel like through his career, he pushed me forward to where I am in New York because we've won the New York Breds and all these stake races. He's just a special horse to me.
When you look back at your success, how much of it is luck and how much of it is hard work?
I think it's all hard work for me. Definitely luck comes along the way with race riding and stuff, but all of it is, I would say all of it is hard work. I put a lot of time in the mornings for where I am today, and I just really think that it's gotten to me where I am today, for sure, and I'm not going to stop. It's just, I don't think I've ever had anything handed to me like that. I'm just trying to find that really one big horse to break through. I just want to be in that top tier group where I'm riding stake races and riding those big races. So, and I'm just trying to learn from the best, and I'm riding with these guys in New York year round. And I'm very blessed to be doing that.
You're getting there, kid. You're not too far off. I mean it, and I think other people see it. Your work ethic and your talent is coming through, and I think you're a big horse away from really breaking through that stardom. And we have enjoyed watching your career, enjoyed watching you work hard and make it the way you have. And we look forward to seeing you back. And it's disappointing you got hurt, and I know you are disappointed that you got hurt, but we look forward to seeing you come back and hopefully see you at Saratoga.
Thanks, Sean. So I really think that this injury, you know, staying with my family and stuff, will put me even more drive to come back stronger, for sure.
I have no doubt. That's Dylan Davis. All the best, Dylan. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Sean.
If you weren't a fan of Dylan Davis before that conversation, you should be now. What a great kid. Hardworking, humble, learning from the best, as he said, and no stranger to taking criticism and trying to get better each and every day. Fantastic stuff. My thanks to Sean and to Dylan Davis. You can catch In the Room with Sean Clancy every single Saturday here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, right here on the Equine Forum, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Coming up next, it's time to stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, then a visit with trainer Graham Motion. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Pit Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
The spring meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. New for this year's meet will be the Stephen Foster Preview Day on May 29th with seven stakes races as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning You're In Florida Lee for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Zapper, champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're into the stretch. Badger land on the outside. On the inside for overrangement. Here comes Ferdinand on the rail. In
the final furlong is Tarzan getting the lead. On the outside, Palmer Redman and Frog Run. Nearing the wire, it's Tarzan in front. On the outside, Palmer Redman. Coming to our first name and the Bill Shoemaker wins the Derby by two. Frog Run finishes second, a photo for third. And Ferdinand under Bill Shoemaker, the master, wins the Kentucky Derby.
Gotta love it. Mike Battaglia with the call of the 1986 run for the Roses. Ferdinand getting the victory under Bill Shoemaker for Hall of Famer Charlie Whittingham. What a moment that was. 35 years ago. Boy, where does that time go? Unbelievable. Both the Shoe and Charlie Whittingham have played an integral role, obviously, in developing this sport and in the history. They are part of the history and the lore and the legend of thoroughbred racing. And that leads me into this week's Stroll Through Racing History with Kurt Becker, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. The New York Racing Association is all set to run the elusive Quality Stakes this weekend at 7 furlongs on the Widener Turf Course at Belmont Park. It's a fitting way to remember the accomplished racehorse and sire. Elusive Quality was foaled in Kentucky on January 27, 1993. Owned by Sheikh Mohammed Al Maktoum and trained by Bill Mott, the son of Gone West was unraced at 2. As a 3-year-old, he made his career debut in May of 1996 at Belmont Park. On a rainy afternoon at Belmont in a maiden special weight at 1 1/16, Elusive Quality skipped over a sloppy track leading every step of the way and drew clear in the stretch to win by 11.5 lengths. Later that summer, Elusive Quality headed to Saratoga for his first try against Stakes Company in the Grade 2 King's Bishop on the Travers undercard. Elusive Quality appeared to be headed for victory in the 7-furlong contest, but even money favorite Honor and Glory was mounting a rally in the stretch. Tom Durkin had the call.
Top of the stretch, Elusive Quality, 2-length lead coming to the 8th pole. Honor and Glory trying to get back in it. Delay of Game is third, Distorted Humor fourth, Gold Fever fifth, Final 16th, Elusive Quality still in front. Honor and Glory running on bravely, he's coming fast! It's Elusive Quality, Honor and Glory, here's the line! Too close to call!
It was a tight finish, but the camera would reveal that Honor and Glory had won by a nose. Elusive Quality took the loss, but he would bounce back by winning back-to-back allowance races at Churchill Downs to complete his 3-year-old season. That momentum would continue at the start of Elusive Quality's 4-year-old campaign in Florida. On February 21, 1997, in a 7-furlong allowance at Gulfstream Park, Elusive Quality led every step of the way and drew clear by 5 lengths in the stretch to win his season's debut. Track announcer Tom Durkin called the fractions insane. 21-2 for the quarter, 43-3 for the half, and 107-2 for 6 furlongs. The final time of 1 minute 20 seconds for the 7-furlong distance was a track record. Despite that record-setting performance, there would be no more wins in 1997 for Elusive Quality. He would take a break from the racing wars in July and would not return until the following year. But the rest would do him good. Elusive Quality would open the 1998 season by winning allowance races on the dirt at Gulfstream Park and Churchill Downs by a combined margin of 10.5 lengths. But on May 25th, he finished 8th after setting the pace in the Metropolitan at Belmont Park. Afterward, Mott decided that Elusive Quality would run back on just 6 days' rest, and it would be in a graded stakes, and it would be on a different surface. On May 31st, 1998, Elusive Quality made his turf debut in the 7-furlong Jiper at Belmont Park, and he won by a head. And then, 5 weeks later, on the 4th of July, he returned in the 1-mile poker handicap on the Widener Turf Course, and he won again, this time by 6 lengths and in world record time for the mile, 1:31.75. There was talk of pointing for the Breeders' Cup mile, but instead, Elusive Quality was retired at the end of the season with 9 wins from 20 career starts and $400,000 in earnings. He was a winner on dirt and turf, a track record setter on both surfaces, and had run the fastest mile in the history of the sport. Sent to stud in Kentucky, Elusive Quality sired 11 stakes winners in his first crop, sired champion and dual classic winner Smarty Jones in his second crop, and later sired Breeders' Cup Classic winner Raven's Pass. Elusive Quality was pensioned in 2017, and he died 1 year later at the age of 23. His impact on the breed continues today through the influence of his sons, such as Quality Road, while his daughters have produced such prominent horses as reigning champion juvenile Essential Quality. Today, the New York Racing Association remembers Elusive Quality with the running of a race named in his honor. And we join them in saluting the late world record holder who became one of the most influential sires of his era. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, another fantastic story. My thanks to Kurt for that piece. Again, you can catch it every single Saturday here on the Equine Forum. Elusive Quality, his daughter, Delightful Quality, the dam of two-year-old champion, and the likely Kentucky Derby favorite, Essential Quality, who is a son of Tappet. And that mating obviously turned out pretty well. Essential Quality undefeated, and we'll see if he can remain that way coming up next Saturday. Of course, you can join us for all that coverage here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It begins Tuesday morning with the first of three Derby Countdown shows presented by Hillendale Farms. It continues with coverage of the Kentucky Oaks presented by Twin Spires. This show, presented by FarmPaint.com next Saturday, is live from Churchill Downs from 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern. And, of course, all of our Derby undercard coverage for 2 hours from 3 to 5. And at 5 Eastern next Saturday, we begin, in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network, our coverage of Derby 147. And you can catch that presented by Twin Spires all over the country. A listing of affiliates, SiriusXM channel information, and all that live streaming on our website, horseracingradio.net. When I come back, I'll turn back the clock 10 years to 2011, and I'll visit with trainer Graham Motion talking about Animal Kingdom. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Country Grammar, Royal Ship, or Country Grammar, it will be Royal Ship to outfinish Country Grammar, and they were well clear of Independence Hall in third in the Californian.
Royal Ship, the son of Darley Stallion Midshipman, won the Grade 2 Californian Stakes on Saturday at Santa Anita with that monster effort, posting a 108 buyer. That's the highest this year at a mile or more. A previous Grade 1 winner in Brazil, he's now heading to the Grade 1 Hollywood Gold Cup. That impressive win makes Royal Ship your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Midshipman. In addition to Royal Ship, Midshipman added to his big week with the ultra-impressive debut two-year-old winner Averly Jane at Keeneland for trainer Wesley Ward. She's going to Royal Ascot next. To learn more about Midshipman and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Shackleford who still leads. Here's Nero on the outside, and Animal Kingdom is pouncing late on the John Velasquez. It's now Animal Kingdom on the outside who goes to lead for John Velasquez, and he's going clear by two lengths and running to the line. Animal Kingdom wins the Derby. Nero in second. In third came Mucho Macho Man. In fourth was Shackleford, and then Master of Hounds, Santiva, Brilliant Speed, and then Pants on Fire, and Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion and John Velasquez, who took Derby 137.
That's the way it sounded from track announcer Mark Johnson back in 2011. 10 years ago, Animal Kingdom taking the Kentucky Derby. Larry Colmus had the call on NBC. I think he might have even used the term roared as he stormed home through the stretch. I know that that was music to the ears of trainer Graham Motion, who is with me now here on HRRN. Graham, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
I play that call. I wanted to make sure you were on the line so you could hear it. I know you've watched it a million times, but when you hear that call, what things immediately come to mind?
Well, it definitely cheers me up. it's something that's pretty hard to explain, to be honest. It was an extraordinary moment. You know, it was something I never anticipated accomplishing when I got in the game. I don't think it's a fair goal to set when you start training that you're going to win the Derby. Everybody would like to win the Derby, but it's not a fair goal to set to yourself that you're going to win the Kentucky Derby. So many things have to align, and it was an extraordinary moment for me and my family.
Can you believe it's been 10 years?
No, that's a little shocking. I mean, Johnny and I met in Louisville a couple of weeks ago to sign some Woodford Reserve bourbon bottles, and that's kind of when it brought it home that it had been 10 years. It was a 10-year anniversary. So, no, I can't. You know, he's always going to be a very special horse to me. I doubt I'll ever have one as good as him again. I guess the biggest disappointment is that he hasn't panned out as a stallion, but he looks to be doing great in Japan, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that he passes some of his good genes on there.
Why is the Kentucky Derby so difficult to win, Graham?
Because everything has to align on that given day, and you only have one shot to do it. You know, you can't come back. So it's a one-off deal, and I was just so lucky that he went into it in such good form, and you have to have your horse in that kind of form on that day, and then you have to have the trip, you know, when you get there, because it's not an easy race to navigate. So many things have to align. So that there has to be a little bit of luck involved. There's no doubt about it.
What do you remember about that experience that year? It wasn't your first year at the Kentucky Derby. It was actually the third time you had been there. I can imagine it was much different than the first visit that you made to Churchill Downs in 98 for the Derby.
Yeah, I mean, that I remember them all very well. You know, I had not had particularly good experiences before in the Kentucky Derby, you know. So, obviously, things went very well. It was I didn't feel a great deal of pressure because he was a big price. So, you know, I remember everything. I remember the build-up. I remember his work the weekend before. There's not much I don't remember about it, to be honest.
When he was making that run, and he was far back early in that Kentucky Derby, I think he was 12th early on and then started picking off horses, and by the time they hit the stretch, he was in a great striking position. He ended up winning by almost 3 lengths. Put me there with you at Churchill. Think back to as you were watching that race and watching him make his move. What was that like for you?
So every time I'd run a horse in the Derby before, I always felt that they started struggling when they got to the 3/8 pole. And I think that's kind of when it sorts out the men from the boys a little bit. You know, I thought he was in a good spot down the backside. And then I noticed, you know, around about the 3/8 pole, whenever I'd sort of been in trouble in years past, that Johnny had a lot of horse and he was starting to navigate horses. So I thought, oh, this is encouraging. This looks a little different this time. When they turned into stretch, you know, I started to get pretty good feeling about it, and I just remember thinking when he hit the 16th pole, you know, don't take this away from us now, because that would be so cruel, you know. He looked like a winner. That was an extraordinary feeling.
How many times will you go back, or will you go back even today and take a look at that race again and just kind of take yourself back there and remember that day?
You know, it's a weird thing, Mike. I don't do that a lot.
Really?
I obviously have watched it, and I love to watch it. And, you know, sometimes I'll just catch it. Somehow it'll show up on a show or something. But I don't necessarily go back and watch it a great deal. I don't know why that is. I guess I remember it so clearly.
I'm talking with trainer Graham Motion here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Graham, outside of that huge Kentucky Derby performance. And by the way, I'm going to ask you this question in a minute. I'm going to ask you your other Animal Kingdom memories, your other favorite moments. But I want to bring something up that you've told me in the past. You said that after the race, you weren't even sure how to get to the winner's circle, but you had Dale Romans as an escort. Tell me about that.
Well, I wasn't. I mean, we had box seats, obviously, and you know, I got up to the box seats with my family, and somebody was actually in our box seats once we got up to the grandstand because we hadn't really sat in them all day. So that was kind of an amusing experience. After the race, you know, we're up in the grandstand. I'm not that familiar with Churchill. I'm a little more familiar with it now than I used to be. But after we won the race, of course, everybody kind of engulfed us, and I had absolutely no idea how to get to the winner's circle. And I remember Dale Romans coming by, you know, kind of high-fived me, and I said, I don't know where I'm going. And he said, well, just follow me. And I literally hung on to his coattails, and he showed me the way down to the winner's circle.
Fantastic. I can't hear that story enough. Wonderful story and a wonderful moment for Graham Motion, for his entire family, and for the entire team associated with Animal Kingdom. All right, now I'll ask you the next question. What is your, outside of the Kentucky Derby, your favorite Animal Kingdom memory or moment?
Yeah, I mean, when we got to Dubai with him, Mike, which, bear in mind, it was 2 years later, so a lot had gone on in between. I just remember how good he was doing that week in Dubai, and I kind of was on tenterhooks because he'd become a little bit of a tricky horse to train. He had a bit of a mind of his own. I remember I was on tenterhooks every day because I was just worried that Alex was going to be able to hold on. But I felt so good about him running, so that was kind of a combination of, you know, couple of years of work and just getting him to that day in such good shape. That's something I'll never forget.
Graham, if there's trainers this year, for Brad Cox, for example, let's take Brad Cox. He has three potential starters in the Kentucky Derby. He has never been there before. He's going to saddle the likely favorite in Essential Quality. What advice, as somebody who's been there, done that, had success, what advice do you give to a guy like Brad Cox who's going through this for the first time?
Well, first of all, I don't think Brad Cox needs any advice from me. He seems to do pretty darn well. But I think probably the biggest thing is just not taking any pressure and doing things any differently from how you'd normally do it. You know, you're certainly scrutinized a lot leading up to the Derby and the Preakness, but I think you just have to stand by your guns and do things the way you do them and not change anything.
Can it be difficult to handle all of the media pressure and the demands that are placed on a trainer with having to be here and there and be part of this event? And can that be difficult, and can it be a big distraction throughout the week?
You know, I wouldn't say so much Derby week as after you win the Derby. I mean, the morning after you win the Kentucky Derby, the question is, how are you going to win the Preakness? And that's a lot to handle, you know, 24 hours after you've just won the biggest race of your career. So I would say, you know, and also I had a long shot, so it'll be a little bit different from Brad this year. He'll have even more scrutiny and more pressure because he's going to be a short price. But the pressure of getting the horse to Pimlico after you've won the Derby, that's very different, very special.
We talked about how difficult it is to win the Kentucky Derby, and you laid out all the reasons why. Put this in perspective for me, Graham. Bob Baffert could be looking at a seventh Kentucky Derby victory this year. That's just mind-boggling, isn't it?
You know, the extraordinary thing to me about this whole story, and a lot of people won't realize this, but we went back the next year with Went the Day Well, who finished an unlucky fourth for Team Valor. And it's just remarkable to me that, you know, you could win the race, you know, which for somebody like me, I don't have as many of those kind of horses as Bob does, obviously. But to have come back the next year and come that close to winning it again is just extraordinary. So it just goes to show a lot of things have to align. What Bob has done is extraordinary. And I think, you know, when you see a guy like Chad who has so many three-year-olds, and even for Todd, it took him a while to win the Derby. It just goes to show how difficult it is. I mean, obviously Todd's won it several times now since, but even those guys that have that many top three-year-olds, it ain't easy.
No, it's not easy at all. Let's talk in generalities for a minute, Graham, about the sport itself, because I talk about this a lot on the program, but for people to hear it from you, I think is even more impactful. Just to get a horse to the starting gate for their maiden race is a huge accomplishment. But to find yourself in the position of being one of 20 from a full crop of more than 20,000 beneath the Twin Spires on the first Saturday in May is like hitting the lottery. Just talk about what it takes to get a horse to the races and how challenging just that can be.
Yeah, I mean, remember when I took over training Animal Kingdom, you know, in March of that year, I still had no idea he was a Derby horse. I mean, I wouldn't even really say until he won at Turfway, perhaps, in the prep race that I had even considered running him in the Derby. You know, we knew he was a nice three-year-old. But to get a horse from stage to stage, I mean, you see the horses that have fallen by the wayside even this year. I don't think people realize how hard it is to keep a horse healthy at that level in order to have them there on that Saturday. So, you know, I feel strongly that when I go back, I want to feel like I really belong. I don't think there's anything worse than going and feeling like you really don't belong. So certainly, if I get there again, I want to have a good feeling about it.
I'm talking with Graham Motion here on HRRN, winner of the 2011 Run for the Roses, but much more to his resume than just that one win. That was special, maybe one of the biggest wins, if not the biggest win of his career, but he has trained more than 2,500 winners in this unbelievable career. Graham, what's the secret, man? How do you keep doing it year in and year out?
You know, it's trying. I mean, I think, you know, these last 2 years have been probably the most difficult that I've experienced between, you know, dealing with COVID, not being able to race where we want to race. We've had a quiet year ourselves, and I think it's just a very humbling game, and you really have to just keep at it. I'm incredibly lucky. I have a really supportive family. My wife's incredibly supportive, but some days you have to dig deep, and you got to keep going, and you got to keep doing what you believe in, and I think that's probably the hardest thing, is not to start questioning yourself.
Yeah, every trainer goes through patches like this, Graham, but when you've trained 2,500 winners, you've won Breeders' Cup races, you won a Kentucky Derby, you know what you're doing. Can it be difficult even for you to keep the faith and know that, hey, I know what I'm doing, I know my program works, and I need to stick to this?
Yeah, definitely. And look, there's always new guys coming in the game all the time, so you've almost got to reinvent yourself constantly. You've got to keep up. You know, it's the same with the jockeys. I mean, you just have to stay very positive, and you've got to believe in, like you say, you've got to believe in what you're doing, and that's easier said than done sometimes. But look, I love this game. I feel incredibly lucky to be part of it. I couldn't imagine doing anything else, so I'm in it for the long haul. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, and still one of the tremendous trainers that we have in the sport, and certainly one of the great horsemen as well. Graham, I'm going to wrap it up by asking you one more question, only because I told listeners I was going to ask you this question when I had you on. I know that you haven't brushed up on all the Derby contenders, certainly, but if there was one horse that Graham Moshe could train in this year's field, and I'll make it easy for you, I think it's probably going to be the favorite, Essential Quality, but if you had one horse you could train, any idea which one you might choose?
Yeah, I mean, how could you not take that horse? He's undefeated. He's been remarkable.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, everybody, it would be a dream to go to the Derby with a horse like him. So good luck to Brad. I hope he can keep it going.
All right, Graham Motion, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. Graham, as always, appreciate the visit. Keep your head up, and let's get this thing rolling again, my friend.
Sounds good, Mike. Thank you.
All right, Graham Motion. Yeah, you talk about a guy that, and he is. He's struggling this year, and last year he struggled. 10 wins from 106 starts here in 2021 so far. Those are not typical Graham Motion numbers. You look back on what he's done throughout much of his career, and, you know, last year 52 wins from 398. The year before that, 94 wins from 496. He'll get there. He'll get rolling again. But in 2000. Well, let's take it from 2011 through to 2014. When he won the Derby in 2011, he won 116 races that year. He won 110 races in 2012, 127 races in 2013, and that got better in 2014. He won 145 races and purse earnings of more than $10.5 million. The guy knows how to train. And I just appreciate him taking time to look back on Animal Kingdom. I appreciate his candor in talking about the struggles of the past couple of years and keeping the faith and staying positive. He'll do it. You're going to hear a lot more from Graham Motion coming up. He is one of the true great horsemen that we have in the sport today, and my thanks to him for being with me this morning here on the Equine Forum. Going to get to another break. I'll come back and get ready to wrap it up and look ahead to next week. This is the Equine Forum, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include greatest stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caraconti, standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park is now open to the general public by visiting santaanita.com/open. Walk-up admission is not yet available, so be sure to make reservations in advance. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live. Join us in person or online this Saturday as our main event is the Grade 2 $200,000 Santa Margarita Stakes for fillies and mares at a mile and one-eighth. Our supporting feature Saturday is the $100,000 Crystal Water for California breds at 1 mile on turf. And fans, make plans to join us for live racing next Friday, April 30th, as the Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks will headline an outstanding simulcast card from Churchill Downs. First post time this weekend is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live.
HRRN is your home for over 20 hours of Derby Week coverage, April 27th through May 1st, leading up to our exclusive coverage of the 147th Run for the Roses. We'll bring you live coverage from Churchill Downs, including our Derby Countdown shows, presented by Hillendale Farms, our exclusive coverage of Kentucky Oaks 147, all the Kentucky Derby undercard races, and more. Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of shows or to listen live.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, don't leave money on the table. You want to race in Kentucky. Lucrative opportunities exist, and they include maiden special weight purses of $106,000 at Churchill Downs Derby Week and $91,000 for the balance of the meet. Simply sensational. Two new $1 million stakes races this year at Kentucky Downs, the Turf Sprint, which is a Grade 3, and Windstar Mint Million, which is also a Grade 3. Join the $1 million Calumet Turf Cup, a Grade 2, and a total of 16 stakes worth a track record $10 million with $4.85 million in purse supplements for registered Kentucky-bred horses. And rewarding excellence is something they do here in Kentucky and do it very well. Over $170 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders since 2006, and with purse money soaring, exceeding $118 million in 2020, and thanks to the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there is clearly no better time to race in the bluegrass. Why race and breed anywhere else? Breed them. Race them. We all win. It's all right here in Kentucky. For more information, visit KentuckyBreds.com. KBIF.com or KBIF.KHRC@KY.gov. Lots of ways to keep in touch with the Kentucky thoroughbred industry. My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible here this morning. Kevin Kirstein was with me in the first half of the program. The folks from Farb Paint stopped by as well. Kurt Becker, jockey Chris DiCarlo, you heard from him. You heard from Pete Rotundo as our industry star of the week. Dylan Davis going in the room with Sean Clancy. Kurt Becker for a stroll through racing history. And Graham Motion just moments ago. All of our Derby Week coverage kicks off on Tuesday. Make sure you're locked in to the program. Tuesday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern, different SiriusXM channel for the countdown shows. Sirius 216, XM 202, they're all presented by Hill & Dale Farms. Going to be a lot of fun. Make sure you join us. Check out our schedule at horseracingradio.net. Follow us on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, to Chauncey for handling our social media. I'm Mike Penna. Go Steelers.